Good afternoon. My apologies for our tardiness. There's a lot of business going on, and I would like to call to order the May 16th work session of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. When we conclude the work session, we will be taking a break, if there is time, until 5:30, and at 5:30 we will begin the public comment session for the six-year improvement program. Probably a good idea for those who have questions or concerns on the six-year program. Let's get in some detail in the questions on that, because those questions likely will come up in public comment, and some of you may need to talk, particularly Mr. McCarthy, to folks in your district on specific questions. So if there's no other issues at hand, I'd like to call up the agenda, and the first item is the agency director report for rail and public transportation. Welcome, Mr. Tucker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the CPB. This is the quick agenda of items that I wanted to cover in my report. I want to update you again on our strategic assessment. I want to talk to you a little bit about our work on our asset management program, update you on the intermodal facility site search, and discuss in some details passenger rail in Virginia. If you recall, this was an item that we identified as requiring additional discussion based upon our discussion about the development of a business plan. Our strategic assessment update is that we have confirmed our organizational structure. I just want to provide some feedback in the sense that at our last meeting, we were not able to discuss some aspects of our organizational changes, which culminated in the personnel decision that that was executed on Friday, where we eliminated 8 positions. We are moving forward in terms of developing our business plan. We're still on track to develop the business plan over the next few months. We're in the process now of really going through and working to document all of our policies and procedures and identify a clear go-forward strategy. One of the items that we are close to completing and having out on the street is the development of the PMC. We have a final draft of that document. I think it's already queued up to go out. And that's going to provide additional support that we need for the agency. On an interim basis and in some terms on a long-term basis. Our full implementation is still on target for August 2007. Again, one of my goals is to be able to update you monthly. Some of the improvements will take a significant amount of time to occur, and they will be implemented gradually, but we do want to keep you up to date. On the next slide really reflects the commitment and the direction of the CTB from our previous meeting that we would provide monthly update on our progress. You have a memo that is attached in your agenda that outlines the progress that we've made in terms of the items that you specify for us to provide additional funding towards. And if there are any questions on that, I would be happy to field them.
Questions, Ms. Tucker?
Matt, you look like you're applying money almost immediately in a couple of instances, but that the majority is actually played out over the next 18 months. Is that right?
Yeah, some of the items in terms of actually just getting the support on board will take time, but some of these documents are not documents like our strategic plans that we're required to develop by 2009 are pretty extensive documents that are not updates for this agency. It will be the actual first time that we've done some of these activities. But a lot of these initiatives, for example, like the performance reviews, are things that are going to be coming online fairly soon within the next couple of months, and you'll see some results in the fall of this year.
And refresh my memory in terms of the timing. These set you up to actually be able to program substantial amounts of additional funds in the years ahead?
Yes, sir. What the funding allowed us to do is actually go out and put these requests for proposals and enter into contracts. Is that essentially what you're asking? So that's essentially what we've done. When you see the fact that we've actually issued an RFP, that means that from a budgeting perspective, we've had to identify and commit a source of funding to cover those costs associated with those initiatives. And again, some of these we won't know until we actually get confirmed prices back and look exactly what the proposals are giving us. The asset management is a good example in the sense that you have two elements of it. One is actually review and development of policies, and then you get into your second phase of it is actual systems. So a lot of these processes are going to be incremental steps that we're going to need to take.
Mr. Chair, just a question on the dashboard. You may have explained it last month, but I'm familiar with the dashboard as tracking construction projects on time and on budget and quality. I know the scope is now under development, but what sort of thing are we going to track?
We're going to track our agency goals, and part of what we're doing is wanting to change some of the discussion how we've talked about our programs in the past. And it goes back to a comment that the Secretary sent out in terms of the changes that we're making. But if you look at the agency 15 years ago, we were primarily an agency that was solely focused in on administering formula grants. Mm-hmm. Now we're involved in some pretty significant efforts. And what we want to be able to do is report out basic results. For example, like statewide transit ridership. Today, we can't do that. We have to call up on a transit-by-transit system basis. And what we want to do is be able to report out the performance so that you will know how the dollars that have been invested come back in terms of program results. Trucks taken off the road or truck diversion rates, which is a better word to use. We want to be able to track those things from our programs. It's really to illustrate the public benefits associated with our programs.
Mr. Chairman, on the reorganizational effort, you've accomplished much of what you've intended to do thus far. As far as that, if you recall last presentation, we had two charts. We had an organizational chart as you existed at that time, and then we had an organizational chart of where we hope to go to, I guess. So that's been accomplished?
I think what you saw was a functional organizational chart. It was not a detailed day-to-day working chart and reporting relationship. But, yes, we have confirmed a basic structure. We got work to do. There are some positions that are critical to the agency that we're going to need to fill. And I will tell you, just like anything in life, things are going to be dynamic. You may take a look at something and decide to do something different depending on the kind of resources that you're tracked. But to the degree that we've made these steps, we've made a determination of where we want to go, we have a path.
Mr. Chair, I think you know where I'm going, and it's the important question for me that I really need to ask at this point, and that is, as we make that transition, my concern is, and I guess I'm seeking reassurance, that we haven't degraded the rural representation in that new organization that we're looking ahead to implement, and that we have the same position at the table representing rural with our interests and our problems and our issues that we would have had before we went through this reorganizational effort. And you and I have talked on that, and there is some, but I just wanted the public reassurance as well on how that structure is going forward and how we will address those issues.
Yes, sir. And in fact, I knew you were going to ask me that question today. And I'll tell you, before I came up the hill, I spoke to a rural grantee who had expressed some concerns, and Mike Guy out of the Bristol region. And we talked through the issue because I understand when people looked at the function chart and saw rural and then didn't see rural. And we talked through the actual underpinnings of what we were trying to accomplish. I have to keep reminding people the fact that when you think about DRPT, don't think about us in the context that you would think about VDOT as an example. VDOT is a large agency. We're a very small agency. And when someone says an entire function is eliminated, it will lead you to think, if you're thinking about it in the VDOT context, is hundreds of people. But for us, it could come across as actually being one position. And the perspective that we have discussed with that particular rural grantee that he was very accepting of is that we're actually beefing up the technical assistance that we provide to our rural grantees. It's no step backwards. It's actually a step forward. All of our documentation that we've provided has been to support and strengthen our rural program. So, in fact, it's a matter of the actions that we're taking will strengthen the provision of rural services, rural technical assistance.
I guess one follow-up. And with that technical assistance, will we see a change from actually having department representation to having only representation from outsourced groups. And the reason I ask that question is because I find it hard and more difficult to see that an outsourced group in charge of a particular a service might not have the same position at the table that we would have if we had a department representative.
What you will see and what every grantee will see are combination. And again, I'll go back to the conversation I had with Mike Guy. They're having a facility project that's coming online. They're in the process of getting bids for that facility project. To some degree, for that specialized project that they may do once in a lifetime project, you're going to want to make sure that we provide specialized assistance to help them get that project delivered on time and on budget. There are going to be other aspects like DRPT-specific programs that we are required to administer, like 5311, 5310, and our day-to-day business. You may interface with a consultant, but in the vast majority of the instances, you will interface with a direct DRPT employee. The other context that I will put it in is that at the end of the day, the grantees are focused in on getting support and good support. And we should judge it by the fact if they're getting better support than they were getting in the past. And that's the way I try to package this, is at the end of the day, the integrated approach will give us better support than we've had in the past.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Next item.
This is just an update on the asset management program. I'll tell you why. You know, I keep beating the drums about asset management because it's going to be a fundamental foundation of how we move forward in terms of being able to provide you as CTB members and all of our stakeholders better information about our programs. That program is well under development. I met with the consultant myself a few moments earlier this morning. And what we've done is issue a survey to all of our grantees on the transit and human service side to really start getting this critical information about their capital needs and their capital program. As you look at it today and think about our six-year flow program, again, we've been sort of an agency just has taken in information and spat that information out, didn't critically analyze it, didn't have the capability of being able to run different scenarios. What we want to do beginning in June is start to talk a little bit about, as the additional funds are coming in, what are the things that we should be thinking about. It's similar to the discussion that we had with VDOT, that maintenance of our existing services is typically always our first priority. How do we ensure that as we move forward with our funding programs that we're making maintenance of our existing infrastructure the top priority, and what are those other goals through accountability and performance do we want to accomplish? So we're going to be coming back to you over the next few months and sort of introducing the discussion. We want to set the framework up as we come with for a dialogue and not with a complete plan and say vote it up or down. We really want to engage in discussion with the CTB members as well as all of our grantees about how we structure and how we develop a policy for that. Very quickly on the Roanoke Region intermodal facility site search. Again, all 10 sites are still under consideration, which is important. But we received a very, very interesting proposal from the city of Salem to take a look in more detail about the Colorado site. Just yesterday, I signed a letter authorizing Norfolk Southern to begin detailed engineering for that site. And we will be working to confirm a schedule for them completion of that review. But until such time that we are able to complete that review, confirm costs, determine if it's actually feasible, we will still be looking at the other nine sites. But it's important. We're very interested by that proposal, and we're going to take a good hard look at it. The next item is really discussion of, I'll go back, the outstanding issues from our strategic assessment passenger rail in Virginia. This is one of the items that we talked about that we wanted to bring better clarity to our program. One of the comments and feedback that I've gotten over the course of the time that I've been here is that folks have not seen the types of progress in our passenger rail programs that they would have liked to have seen. You know, one of the things that, you know, I would want to just say up front, that Virginia is way ahead of the curve. If you look at our Rail Enhancement Fund program, it's very innovative. And one of the things that came about as a result of our consultant review was the fact that we have a very cutting-edge program in the Commonwealth of Virginia. To date, it's been primarily, a lot of the focus has been on the freight side, and folks have been left wanting to see some major forward pushes on passenger rail. But I do want you to feel comfortable in the sense that Virginia is on the cutting edge in terms of identifying reliable funding for both for improved passenger and freight rail. Again, this slide discusses a little bit of our actions and approach. The fact that we need to develop a strategic planning process across all of our programs. And if you look at the initiatives that have been looked at over time, what I've talked about at our last meeting is the fact that most of the work that we've done has been reactive. Someone has asked us to do a study. They've narrowly defined how they want us to do the study. We've done the study. The study has gone on the shelf. We've gotten asked to do another study. It was narrowly defined, and we did another study. We just didn't have a game plan. But we do know we have some major strategies along some key corridors that rail is going to really help us from the perspective of passenger and freight. And we just need to be ready and able to move forward with programs and implementation in such a way that rail does not get left behind. It needs to be considered early in the process and evaluated thoroughly as a solution to some of our transportation needs. So achieving a strategic rail vision. What we said is that as we go through developing a strategic vision, we need to know where will those investments be made, when will those investments be made, and by whom. What will the outcomes and benefits be? Again, a prerequisite of all of our programs, our rail program, the Rail Enhancement Fund, is the establishment and determination of public benefits. And I think that's an important thing for us to keep in mind as we look at passenger rail. And how will these investments be implemented, used, and monitored over time? And one of the comments that I would like to make is as we go through this presentation, we're going to talk about investment strategies, and I'll talk a little bit more about why that's so important. DRPT's approach to rail investments is to develop the passenger rail plan and policy document. You know, it was pretty surprising for me that we just don't have that document in existence today, and develop a strategic rail investment plan. The strategic rail investment plan is really a document that really helps you in terms of determining how and when and where you make those investments and what your expectations should be in terms of performance. The passenger rail plan and policy document, again, is a policy guide for planning and development. You know, again, if someone is asking the basic question, what is the top project in the Commonwealth, we need to be able to answer that question based upon some objective criteria. We need to be the lead for the Commonwealth in establishing a framework for the development and advancement. And we need to be able to have baseline identification and prioritization of passenger rail corridors and establish the benchmark standard for evaluation and methodology. Again, if you look at those bullets, and as we've come, at least during my short time, and had some presentations on these issues, a lot of the questions and a lot of the heartache about what was done as a matter of the study really revolved around those issues.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question? Matt, you know I'm probably going to ask you this almost every month, I suppose. The bottom line of the question is, so how are we doing on the I-95 corridor for passenger rail? And I guess what concerns me, and it's a generic concern, because everything you're saying here is very good management. It needs to be done. It's long overdue. On the other hand, we managed to accomplish an enormous bit of work in the last few years on Dulles Rail. And I don't think we went through quite all these steps to get there. I think the governor or someone, the secretary or the board said, Dulles has got to go out to the airport and so on and so forth. And I guess what I'm trying to say is we need to improve passenger rail in the 95 corridor. How hard an objective can that be to define and sort of organize around and get it done?
It's a good if I may interject, Mr. McCarthy. It's an apt metaphor. Because as Governor Holton came when he came to talk to us, rail in the Dulles Corridor was planned over 40 years ago. We've now had 15 years of very expensive and engaged planning in that corridor. We're on the verge of some important approvals. It was not an easy process. And in fact, one of the things that I like to explain to those of us who don't understand why does it take so long, the levels of checks and balances and approvals, many of you are involved in one aspect or another, and the Dulles Rail Project is a great example of that. It has to be approved by 7 public entities, is constantly revisited, is very expensive, is very political, and there we own the right-of-way.
Point taken.
and I would also just say that it's not mutually exclusive that we can't do both at the same time.
Right.
We can't continue. If you look at the funds that were appropriated by the governor, $495, there's additional investments there. But again, I mean, one of the points that the secretary has made to me when I came on board and continues to make as I'm on board as a reminder is that we've been allocated significant funds for 95 improvements, but over time and historically, we have not implemented them very quickly. So what we need to do on both sides of the equation is we need to have a strategic vision. But I would agree with you. I don't have the luxury of sitting on my hands and waiting for a few years of doing this before doing that. We've already made some commitments on 95, 81, and other important rail corridors that we got to live up to. And we need to move forward and make some advancement on those issues.
Thank you.
The strategic rail investment plan is the guide for the Commonwealth. And again, we want to have a planning horizon that covers the first 5 and 20 years out. And we're going to build on a lot of the initiatives and studies that we've done in the past and again, do some prioritization. This is a summary of the planning schedule that we're looking to move forward with. And again, I'll just emphasize that in no way will we be delaying the advancement of the initiatives. But I think at the end of the day, we're required by 2009 to have a statewide plan that covers this mode. Again, I'll talk a little bit about the I-95 corridor strategic approach. Again, one of our primary goals is to complete the VTA 2000 projects. And to me, the notion of how long some of these projects have spanned, the scope creep, the uncertainty, the issues that we had in terms of cost means we really need to fundamentally change the way we've done business in terms of getting these projects delivered. And that's part of one of the first efforts that we're undertaking right now is to begin a dialogue to look at the MOU agreement and really have some tough discussions about how we improve project delivery. That's going to be key as we talk about 95. Nothing is getting cheaper, is it, Mr. Secretary? We need to find a way to get those projects improvements in place faster, and we need to be able to capture the benefits that were specified in that MOU agreement.
If I might just, if you'll permit me, one more editorial comment, and again, it goes back to the length of time. I was privileged to cut the ribbon for the Quantico Creek Bridge, which is the major bottleneck in the I-95 corridor and for VRE. When did that project start? Began with an earmark by our wonderful Senator John Warner in 1993. And it took us 14 years to bring that project online. That was about a $3 million project, the original estimate. It was $27 million 14 years later. We have got to find a way. I mean, we're cutting new ground in terms of these public-private partnerships for these rail projects. But Mr. Tucker is absolutely correct. Thank God somebody had the vision 14 years ago to identify a bottleneck and, you know, put some funding on it. But it has been very, very difficult to develop a project in a timely fashion. It's not unique to that corridor. I mean, that's the nature of these public-private partnerships. They're very, very hard.
Again, one of the things that we've talked about is the fact as we look at the 95 corridor, we really need to conduct some alternatives analysis. We need to think out of the box. I understand we have a sense of urgency in terms of moving. Everyone expects us to move this along. But we need to practice some due diligence in terms of making sure that we're making some solid, good decisions for us and investing our dollars wisely. One of the things that I know from what I've seen is some of the incremental approaches that we have taken have led us to make mistakes that we may want to that we otherwise would not have made if we had taken a longer-term look at some of these things and really understand what we're going. Incrementalism happens because funding comes in incrementally, but it doesn't mean from a strategic point of view that we can't have an ultimate end game. And we also know from a bottom-line perspective in terms of this I-95 corridor that the improvements to really bring it up to what people expect for passenger and freight rail are going to be very, very expensive. And it won't be able to be done on the Commonwealth's nickel alone. We're going to have to identify willing and able, not partner, but partners, if we're going to bring to fruition what everyone has expected out of this corridor. along the I-81 corridor. That's been something that has been widely discussed. I'll just speak to the fact that we are at the point with the study today that we're starting to look at the diversion. We've gotten some of the information about diversion. We've asked for the consultant to go back and look at metrixing out. If you remember the legislation that came from the General Assembly required a 60% diversion rate. We want to be able to look at it and step up in increments to see how we can make various levels of improvements over time. And at the same time, making sure that we're doing the due diligence and ensuring that we're getting the maximum benefit for the rail investment that we're making.
Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Matt, the resolution on I-81 that this board passed a few months back directed that after the completion of the Tier 1 environmental impact statement, that the Tier 2 analysis would take into account the results of this study. And I'm very concerned about this because my own view is that the analysis in the Tier 1 EIS, which is now being finalized, is badly flawed and will be till the end because this won't be taken into account. So my question to you is, how will the results of this study get worked in? What will be the coordination to make sure, as we dictated in our resolution, the results of this study will get done on time and will get incorporated into the analysis going forward for the I-81 corridor improvements?
Yes. I think where we are with that process is first we're getting the market analysis. And one of the important points that I want to make is that this was something primarily initiated by CSX. So from the perspective that, are we going to get the maximum bang in terms of diversion, here's a private sector entity that directly benefits from getting as much on their rails as possible. So the study that essentially that is occurring to help us to determine what is the market diversion rate going to be is driven by primarily by the business work that they were already underway. If the CTP resolution requires that before we make those final decisions that we take into consideration the diversion rates that can be achieved, exactly as what you said. So the process that we're going to follow is going to be factually that we're going to get the diversion performance metrics, and then we're going to set that aside before any final improvements are identified for the Tier 2 study. So we are, in fact, following through that matrix. In fact, I met with Mary Lynn, Dr. Tissue a few weeks ago, and we were talking about really what is the process that we're going to go through to really do that evaluation in terms of you get this diversion rate and what does it mean for improvements along 81 from a highway perspective.
And will you be reporting to us as you go through that process so that we'll see the progress that you're making on this study?
I would assume that it would be a very open and transparent process. In fact, we just had a discussion a few moments ago before the meeting began that it's probably now time that we start communicating out to the public the status of that rail study so that folks can understand exactly where we are in time. But yes, it will be very open and transparent.
And I don't think anybody's looking for a diversion analysis that unduly favors rail. I think what we're looking for is a really honest, fair, unbiased analysis that gives us the best possible data in terms of the potential diversion, you know, from the rail investment.
Yes, sir. I understand that. And you have to look at it from the perspective that you get various levels of diversion for Virginia-only improvements and versus multi-state improvements. So, right. I understand.
Mr. White.
Matt, can you flip back to 16 related to Ms. Trouble? That would be easy now. This timeline, it would be helpful to me if you could flesh it out a little bit and tell us how this thing is going to work. Is the CTB going to be involved, the Rail Advisory Board? What does public outreach mean? And Mr. McCarthy asked about the I-95 corridor. If you could use perhaps TDX as an example of how that previous work would come through this schedule and be examined, and by whom?
Okay. I guess what I would do is probably recommend that I come back next month and break it out in detail. But the entire intent for us was, as we went through this process to develop this document, is as we get to the appropriate points, to do check-ins. And one of the things that we've talked about is, as I talked about the whole flow chart, we're going to have a lot of different pieces of information that feeds into the development of a plan. And all of those items are going to be items that the CTB is going to look at. One of them I'll talk about is that whole investment strategy. And it really isn't a strategy that looks across all of our programs and identifies what are the performance metrics based from best practices for a transit bus. At what level should you put a transit bus along a corridor and expect to achieve X level of ridership, fare box recovery? For inner city rail, what are those characteristics? What are those standards? What needs to be in place before you make those decisions? So, yes, our intention is to come back every step of the way and have the CTB be briefed and give us direct feedback on adoption of these policies. Ultimately, at the end of the day, the CTB will have to adopt policies relative to the expansion of public transportation and passenger rail.
So at the next meeting, you would propose to give us a more comprehensive...
I'll give you a more comprehensive briefing in terms of the actual steps that we're going to take, but it is going to be a process over time that's going to have different steps that the CTB is going to have to take a look at and weigh in heavily as we lead toward developing a final program that has prioritized projects. I think that's it.
Outstanding. Thank you, Ms. Tucker. The next item, and this is really a follow-on from our previous meeting on the business plans of both DRPT and VDOT. This is real important work, and I appreciate everybody. It's not the most glamorous work, but it's how we deliver our product. So I appreciate the very hard work of DRPT and the commissioner. And in fact, at our last meeting, the commissioner really did not have enough time to give a thorough presentation of his business plan. Commissioner is required by statute to annually present a business plan which is based on the six-year program. So while he is messing with technology, I'm going to keep filling airtime on his behalf and talking about the importance of what he is about to talk about.
I have to start talking quickly before you help too much, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Commissioner. Welcome.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you. As the Secretary indicated, what I'd like to do this afternoon is to revisit and update a little bit what we've learned since our briefing with you last month around the emerging business plan that we'll bring forward for fiscal year 08. A couple of headlines up front. Very frankly, as I've joined VDOT and Virginia, one of the things that impressed me early on was what Greg and the staff had done in pioneering in a business plan effort and turning it into real life. But in a lot of agencies, you'll look at business plan activities and they become kind of add-ons. They do not become real tools for managing your business and adjusting your direction. I think we've demonstrated over the last few months that the Virginia model is a model that focuses on tangible changes, on real things that happen. And I can tell you as I go around and visit across the Commonwealth and with divisions, when people ask questions about how does the business plan affect me as an individual either within the organization or those organizations we work with, it is really interesting to be able to show them a direction and implementation and bring it down to real life in terms of how we're continuing that journey of streamlining, modernizing, and really bringing the Commonwealth an effective transportation system and organization. My piece and what I want to do for you this afternoon is, again, just quickly remind you of the emerging definition that we're using around a business plan as we have learned its power. Again, this is that document and process that we put discipline around to translate into action statewide initiatives to change our system, transportation system, the business that we run, and to deal with and help the workforce that populates VDOT as we do our business. I won't spend a lot of time on this slide, but this is kind of the theme that we've had over the last few months that is trying to capture in one place the purpose of a business plan, ensuring that we have the right focus, that our business is the right size, and that we're using the right approaches to doing our business. I used this slide last month as an intro to put the business plan in context. One of the themes that I've had over the last few weeks now is working with the staff and with the department is using the tools that are around us to shape our business plan. You got to connect the dots, and that's what this is about. So it starts with the very activities that Director Tucker was talking about that we've had a rich history in and that this board has shaped for transportation in this Commonwealth. That is a strategic planning process. VTrans 2025, key example. That establishes our goals, and it does it very articulately. The Strategic Highway Safety Plan that the Commonwealth has emerged, which is a joint agency venture, again, is a tool or is the piece that we need to turn into action items to actually accomplish reduction in deaths in this Commonwealth. You look at that center bubble, the governor's goals as they've been established around accountability, integrating transportation and land use, and obviously in the finance and funding initiatives. We turn those into action items within a business plan context. And we try to recognize in a very disciplined way our recognition of congressional, USDOT, Federal Highway Administration, General Assembly, and CTB direction to the transportation professionals that do the day-to-day business of transportation. It's important that we consciously sit down, look at those items, and say, what does that mean for where we're headed in continuing this journey of modernizing VDOT? That turns into, now I've got to be careful what I do here next. I got this really sporty set of overheads now that kind of motivate and do stuff. Those things lead to what I talk about as a business plan. But the business plan is not the sole and exclusive tool of the department. We also look to our directorates, divisions, and districts to do that, as a part of that process, look at their individual missions and talk about what their action plans need to be in conducting those parts of our business that do not rise to the business plan level. So we'll continue to use this model. It seems to be getting legs. And that center set of boxes, what that really represents is that disciplined step you need to take between long-range thinking, strategic direction, and carefully putting into place those changes that you need to make in your business. In VDOT, what we have done is said, we'll take that 12 months at a slice. And so for the next 12 months, we'll look at a variety of what looks to be 13 new initiatives within our focus areas and make a conscious business decision about their implementation, thoughtfully done, which leads to that step of integrating them into then, those that are successful, integrating them into our ongoing business practices. So what we study in 08, we would expect to implement in 09. That is very consciously thought out. If you look backwards into what the staff developed in 07, very conscious thought process around certain business initiatives which are in 08 being implemented. That's kind of how the cycle works, hopefully very quickly. You know, a 12-month turnaround in a major corporation like VDOT is really moving very rapidly when you put it in that context. DOTs across the country take several years to make those kinds of changes. That's what's kind of exciting about the power of our business. I have this specific and outstanding programming criteria that we use, and I won't go into it in depth for you because we talked a little bit about it last month. But I did want to show you the piece that we're adding and remind you of that as I call up our three focus area leaders to talk a little bit about it. Our focus areas in the business plan really are standing, I think, the test of time. We seem to be getting good reaction. A series of initiatives focused around changes in the transportation system or reshaping the transportation system. A series of initiatives around our business activities. How do we do the business? And a third set that recognizes our workforce. Key piece, because of the changing dynamic in VDOT as we integrate private sector practices, private sector businesses into the business that we have traditionally done solely in-house. So that opens up a whole set of skill sets, directions that we need to talk about. And lastly, what we briefed you on last month and will roll out about mid-year, Dashboard 3.0. How do you manage an organization? You manage it through performance. You manage it through performance management. And our dashboard is our way of now taking us beyond on time and on budget without losing our focus on that initiative. What I'd like to do now is by the way, in your notebooks, you'll find some sheets like this. You did a great exercise for us in a flash reaction last month. That we really appreciate that, giving us your flash assessment of impact of the initiatives that are either ongoing into 08 or that we'd like to add in 08. We've done two things since our last meeting. I had the opportunity to test this same tool on a set of our private sector partners. You'll find that listed under the sheets that are titled CEO Forum Assessment. 18 respondents. We did that in an afternoon. It's kind of interesting to track your view against that private sector view. And then we did one other thing the last couple of weeks at the Garver Conference, Garver Leadership Conference. And you'll find the results of 98 respondents from within the department. So that's our mechanism to get consensus and get, you know, make sure that we're on, got some real legs here.
Mr. Chairman. Actually, I wanted to ask you about that, and I'm glad you raised it to track the. Is there much difference between the three sets of responses at this point? Or do you see anything that we should know about?
It's really fascinating for me, and I'll give you Dave's reaction to what I see. On the system side, I see really strong consensus in all three groups about the directions that we're talking about when we talk about reshaping the system. On the business side, I see some really good consensus, with the exception of Dave's personal favorite, which is telework. It is amazing to me how the consensus is they don't like what Dave's proposing about telework. So, to that degree, it illustrates a couple of points. You know, leadership sometimes can be a lonely place because those are tools that we need to be successful in a telework environment. So I've tried to interpret that in my own view as saying, is it a readiness question? Is it a cultural question that gets it rated differently than I would hope it would be? On the whole, I'm pretty excited about the fact that we've got If you look at the highs and the mediums, we've really got good consensus all the way around the table about these are the right things to be focusing on overall.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to comment the private sector went through exactly the same thing, that it was a novelty. The fact is, whether we like it or not, everything that can be digitized will be digitized. That means it's available over the Internet. That means you can work from anywhere. And to just ignore that that's happening is a mistake. So, but it took a while for the private sector to come across with that.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, I have a question on the part of the presentation where you talk about the right focus. And the third item on there, you say delivering projects on time, on budget, and with high quality, all of which are obviously important. There's a fourth characteristic, though, which is that they have to be the right projects. If they're not the right projects, whether they're on time, on budget, and high quality almost becomes irrelevant. And so you sometimes hear the word, it's probably overused, right-sizing. But the idea is designing first conceptually and then for construction a project that meets the need and doesn't overdo the response to the need, which is important in a resource-constrained environment, obviously. But it's also important in terms of addressing community impacts of road construction, context sensitivity, is challenging ourselves always to make sure that we have found the project which is the right size, isn't too little, but also isn't too much. And so my question is, where in the business plan that you're proposing, where do you plug in that sort of self-questioning process where we make sure that we are right-sizing the projects that we're coming up with?
Three different points is where we touch on that indirectly, and which will have the result, we hope, of exactly what you're talking about. First, under the system size, although it's not specifically called for, what you'll see in improving land use and transportation with our partners is a conversation that talks about long-range planning from a couple of perspectives. One, the vision side of the equation, and two, the performance side of the equation. So you will start to see an influence on how we think about projects, corridors. There's an awful lot of things now that are going, you'll see embedded and proposed within the six-year plan that start to open the door for that dialogue around what should corridors look like and what are the goals for the corridors. That has a direct influence on, quotes, what is the right project for a given corridor. Second place you're going to see this is I've got an initiative that talks about unifying the six-year planning processes with the STIP. That will open a whole variety of discussions, I think, not only around process and having documents that are readable and integrated, so we do it once, don't do it three different times, and talks about program focus and scope of projects, and that's a process that all of you are engaged in as we speak. Third point, or third place I find that impacted is in the workforce piece where we talk about context-sensitive solutions training. We have an initiative that is underway and starting to take on some greater legs that talks about what are context-sensitive solutions. My intent in that is to have the discussion that says redefine what is a successful project by defining what is public involvement, how do we do that, environmental compatibility, engineering consensus, good quality engineering, and on time, on budget. Developing in four parallel tracks that activity in any given quarter. That's the real challenge that faces that part of our business today. So I think you'll see the cumulative effect of those three or four initiatives starting to get at the very question you're raising.
Could that be worked into the dashboard so that when the folks who were working on specific projects are evaluating themselves or being evaluated, that's one of the gauges on the dashboard, if you will, to see how they're doing, you know, in that regard?
That's an interesting point. That's an interesting comment. I sat in for a little while at the Accountability Commission this morning, listening to some presentations that were being done about how do you measure that very kind of issue. There's some interesting things going on across the country that are being reported on that do, in fact, introduce performance measures around project success. I don't know where the commission will ultimately come out on that, but there is a body of knowledge growing around that. When we talk about a successful project, that will be one of the challenges I suspect we'll be looking at as the dashboard continues to evolve. I don't think we're quite there yet, but it's the direction that we're headed, I think.
Thank you.
Other question? Oh.
I just have one other comment. I mean, this is hard. It's hard to change our thinking about actually what we're attempting to do, what our business is, and so forth, because it's not going to be the same answers that we've had in the past. I like that Matthew Tucker talked about it, defining and establishing the public benefit. I like us to think of responding to travelers and commuters as customers in the system, not as taxpayers, not as citizens, not as voters. There's other parts of the system that do those things. I like us delivering value that customers expect, because then customers don't mind paying. That's what we've learned in the private sector. It's not what it costs. It's does it give me the value that I expect? And I think you're in the right direction here in establishing value. Ultimately, the project descriptions, sizes, costs, geography, and all that need to be behind the interface with the customers. And you deliver what the customers value, which will be those things, but they really care about the value. So if we keep our minds there, you're going to end up with the right projects that are the right size, right? Because they'll be supported.
And very frankly, at the program level, as I've watched the program emerge or been a part of that process, I think the Secretary is very articulate about the impact of 3202 in terms of what it has done to exactly address those kinds of concerns and the investment goals that are being established. So I think the parts are coming together. People like to look at this as a simple one-size-fits-all kind of a tool, and it's never quite that direct. And I really appreciate the feedback we're getting from the board. Our staff is listening in some sense. It's pretty good. Now, what I'm going to do is give we've assigned senior staff, and you can see them listed on the slide, around reshaping the system, reshaping the business, and reshaping the workforce as the, quote, focus area leaders. Ultimately, what you'll see coming out of this process is a series of about 13 or 15 initiatives that will be guided by this focus area leaders as we move through the year. That's my way of making sure that we keep that in front of the senior management of the department. I'm going to ask each of them to come up and briefly go through their focus areas, those initiatives, and give you a chance to ask some questions around them as we go forward. That's okay. Great. So I'll call on Gary first.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good afternoon, members of the board. Good to see you again. I'll try to move through this fairly rapidly, but not quite as rapidly as last month, to give you a little more time to ask some questions, and I'll do my very best to answer them. There are four major areas that we are going to be undertaking some actions on in terms of reshaping the transportation system and how we deliver it, how we focus on it. One has to do with improving preservation and management of the system. The second one, improving safety. A third one that deals with mobility. And a fourth that deals with land use and transportation. We're very early in this process in terms of taking actions, but we have spent a lot of time carefully thinking about the items that we have included under each of these areas. The first one is to establish a program for the repair and replacement and rehabilitation, primarily repair and rehabilitation, of bridges that are less than 60 feet in length. If you look across the Commonwealth and you take a map and you color code it, you look at those counties where we have lots of bridges that are in disrepair, then you will find that many of those bridges fall along the ridge line just west of the Blue Ridge Mountains along the valley. Now, you'll also find some of the other counties, for example, around in the Richmond District where you have the same difficulty. But taking care of secondary system bridges is not an exotic or an exciting thing to do. Nevertheless, it's a very important thing to do.
What?
It's an important thing to do. There's a little bridge in a county in the Culpeper District now that recently has been closed on the secondary system. And we had no choice but to close that bridge. But that is causing our customers, Mr. Colomay pointed out, a lot of grief. They are very, very unhappy. We believe, based upon some work we've done already in terms of a pilot in the Stanton District and in Culpeper, that we can, with the means we have available to us today and with the processes that are available, if we'll just change a few things, we can take care of these bridges that are most in need of repair. And we can do that fairly quickly. We can do it in some instances with our own forces. We can get traffic back on them. We can increase the weight limits of those bridges. And that is important for both safety and for economic vitality of the region. Second point, whole workshops on rapid repair technology for delivering cost-effective maintenance and with minimal traffic delay. Again, that goes to the heart of serving customers. We know, based upon research that we've done, that there are a number of technologies that are available to us that can provide very rapid repair techniques. We can get in an evening. We can do some things to repair bridge decks, even on the interstate system. And we can have it back under traffic by 5 a.m. Well, there's a lot of benefit to doing that, several perspectives. You certainly reduce the impacts on the public because you can keep them moving. But you also dramatically reduce the cost of the repairs because you can reduce traffic control costs, which are extensive. Under traditional kinds of bridge deck repair, you might have a lane down for a month or more. If we can get that down to a day or an evening or a couple of days, it makes good sense to do that.
Who attends these workshops? Are these contractors?
These workshops will be attended by both VDOT personnel and private sector contractors. And I would point out that the CEOs, when they saw this as a proposal, private sector folks set up, many of them rated this very, very highly. Deliver recommendations on the fee structure associated with heavy vehicles. Those are legislatively mandated studies that relate to allowing vehicles to travel under permit with fairly heavy weights. And we know that that can cause significant damage to the roadway. We are working on some assessments from an engineering standpoint of what those impacts are. And then we're going to be developing a proposed fee structure for the commissioner and the CTB to review, along with legislation, which is called for as part of those studies. Fourth bullet there is to take a look at develop a plan for reassigning components of the highway system to the functional classification system. That's not due until January the 1st, 2009. However, we're already working on that. It is a very important examination because when you step back from that, it's more than just classifying a roadway into a functional class. It can have significant policy implications if you step back from that just a bit. I see the Secretary smiling.
If I might add, it's fortunate that that is a 2009 deliverable, but this body is involved in the approval of that process, which may indeed set in motion a fairly significant reshaping, not just to the classification, but the funding that goes with it. So this is a very important study that we want to have interim reports and updates on as we work towards the fall of 2008 for its conclusion. That'll be a major work product of the CTB.
The biennial report that is referred to on this slide is a biennial report that deals with maintaining the system and the budget and the kind of levels of funding that are required there. That falls under the responsibility of the Asset Management Division, and I'm sure that information will be coming before this board. Certainly, we're going to continue the implementation of the Total Asset Management Turnkey Maintenance Program, and we are working along those lines. Improve safety and security. Implement the 50 actions from the Virginia Strategic Highway Safety Plan. Many of us have been affected by either a family member or a friend who has been either seriously injured or in some instances killed as a result of a highway crash. Nothing is more important than safety. Nothing. If we were to line up all of the individuals who are killed as a result of highway crashes each year, those 900 people in one room at one time, or if they fell out of the sky as the result of crashes of airplanes, we'd sit up and take notice. But when we kill people one at a time, we seem not to take so much notice. The actions of the Strategic Highway Safety Improvement Program are critical, and it's part of our business plans. Implement a program focused on signs and safety. This has to do with legibility, visibility, retroreflectivity of signs and pavement markings, both at night and during bad weather. If we can get our roadways delineated better, if we can have better signing, then we stand a chance of reducing the risk. And let me underscore the word risk. Reduce the risk of crashes and fatalities. We can't always control them, but we certainly can do our part to reduce the risk. Establish a Virginia Center for Transportation Safety, especially focused on truck safety and older and younger drivers. This is an initiative that I'm working on together with Virginia Tech. Dr. Tom Dingus is a very good friend and colleague of mine who is the head of the Virginia Tech Transportation Institute. By midsummer, we hope to have in place a cooperative agreement that will create this Virginia Center for Transportation Safety that will be a combined effect of VTTI, the University of Virginia, and the Virginia Transportation Research Council. We know that research and understanding drivers can help us reduce the risk of fatalities and serious injuries. Conduct a review of all Virginia's laws regarding pedestrian safety and recommend changes to the code. Pedestrian safety and bicycle safety may not, again, be the thing that frequently gets in the headlines. But it is important. It is very important, especially in urban areas. And we are examining the existing pedestrian safety laws, the existing bicycle laws, to see if there are ways that we can take steps to reduce the risk of crashes and fatalities along those lines. Improve mobility. After all is said and done, mobility is what the end result is that people are interested in. They want to be mobile. They want to get somewhere. They have a purpose for going somewhere. Congestion takes its toll on economic development. It dramatically increases the cost of doing business, especially in urban areas such as Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads. And we cannot discount that. We have to pay attention to it. The development of a comprehensive statewide congestion management program can help us along those lines. Expanding the use of safety service patrols and implementing quick clearance techniques, we know, can dramatically reduce the congestion that is associated with incidents. And we know that incidents can account for as much as 50% of our congestion difficulties. Explore the use of advanced technology solutions to improve traffic flow and information in Hampton Roads in Northern Virginia. We are just beginning to scratch the surface with what technology can in fact do to provide more information for us. Communications actually is a substitute for moving people around. Communication is a substitute for moving people around. So if you can reduce the cost of moving people around through technology, then you can reduce congestion, then you can actually reduce the cost of those things that actually do have to move. Implement an enhanced Virginia Operational Information System and 511 Virginia. We know that a lot of folks are using 511 Virginia to gather information for special kinds of events, such as the Williamsburg celebration, the visit of the Queen. We also know that the current system we have leaves a lot to be desired. And so we're working on ways to improve those. It's probably going to be early in 2008 when we get all those things in place. But it will allow us, from the standpoint of inside VDOT, to respond more rapidly and accurately to incidents and emergency situations, and it will help us provide better information to the public. Develop and implement a comprehensive highway access management set of standards. We were well down the road on that. That is, in combination with a number of other things, a way that we can help move traffic, help protect corridors, and still provide the kind of access that is necessary. Doesn't mean you have to have direct access to every business. In fact, what we know is that if we can develop a good access management program, you don't have to have direct access. You can get access better through a good access management program. Pursue the Hot Lanes Network. That's something we need to continue to do to work with the private sector with the high occupancy programs.
Mr. Chair, could I just ask one question? I find all these just very good, and I'm so glad you're pursuing all these points. But are there any of these quick clearance techniques that we know of that we aren't implementing right now? Or what's the... Because certainly in congested areas, it's these incidents that are extraordinarily...
Sometimes it simply is a matter of communicating better with other agencies that are involved in the incident itself, police, fire, rescue. There was legislation that was enacted, as I recall, in this session of the General Assembly that allows us to have VDOT folks move along the side of the roadway to help clear incidents. But establishing best practices and examining those from the standpoint of what other states are doing is something we need to do. We just need to do it as a check to make sure we're capturing all the best practices. That's why we're proposing. Improving land use and transportation with our partners. As the commissioner mentioned, this is a key aspect of changing the transportation system and working with localities regarding land development. We're not going to forestall development. No one really wants to. It's an economic engine that helps all of us. The issue is making sure that we coordinate land use and transportation. The implementation of Chapter 527, the traffic impact requirement process, that now actually requires local governments, when a certain threshold of traffic impact is met, to do a traffic impact assessment, provide that to VDOT, and then VDOT will comment on that so everyone will understand what the implications of that development are, what those implications are. When you can communicate that with folks, and you can create a forum for dialogue and debate, then you get better informed decisions. VDOT is not going to make the decisions. They're not allowed to. But our role is to review these impact statements and provide feedback. That's a very positive thing. Local system improvements. Aiding localities in determining whether or not to assume control of the secondary system. There are many, many reasons that one might argue that it makes sense for localities to have control of their own local roads, not the least of which is an incentive to take account of their own decisions and how it affects them locally. We do have a tool that we have developed to aid localities in making that assessment, looking at what the costs and benefits are, and we're going to be working with any localities that want to pursue that.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Allen, when you say the biggest obstacle there is the fear of localities on funding?
Excuse me?
When you say the big obstacle there, they would probably love to do their own roads, but the biggest obstacle in stepping forward to assume that responsibility is the fear of the funding factor.
That may be a significant risk that the localities face. I also think that for some localities, there's a lot of solace in being able to say, well, we would have liked to have done such and such, but you know what? That dirty old mean VDOT just wouldn't let us do it. That's my personal opinion. But I think that certainly funding is a significant issue. I think the other issue I mentioned is important as well.
If I might add on that issue, you know, there's assuming construction responsibilities, which is the First Cities Initiative, and as well as assuming secondary road construction, is very different from the maintenance responsibility. And one of the things that we need to be talking about, I think, particularly under the First Cities, if cities are already, and towns are already maintaining their own roads and have that capability in-house, except for some very large, complex projects, it just, in my judgment, makes sense to vest the construction's responsibility. You can move the money back and forth between maintenance and construction when you have both, and I think will actually yield greater economies over time. It's a different issue with the counties, clearly.
And that relates to the second bullet that you see on this slide, which is the local administration of the projects with the First Cities Initiative as a baseline. The third point here relates to subdivision street standards.
Could you go back for just a moment? I want to make sure I understood what you said. The funding, the fear of funding and consistency of it is one factor, but what was the other one that you first emphasized?
The other point that I made is that I believe that a number of localities take solace in the ability to point the finger at VDOT and say, we would have loved to have done X, but VDOT would not allow us to do that. If, in fact, they take over their local locally, if they take over responsibility, then that capability is no longer there.
The book's up here.
So that's my personal opinion from observation over many years.
Thank you.
And as one who comes from local government, I can certainly substantiate.
So can I.
The Subdivision Street Standards Modernization, Senate Bill 1181, that really does some things that provide some very, very strong incentives to local governments, not just to accept anything that
then goes into the secondary system and ultimately ends up raising the cost of maintenance for people. Thank you very much. Mr. Secretary, you have some questions.
Gary, in terms of reshaping the system, I look at the four system points that you've set up here, numbers 1 through 4, and I think they're great. I can't take issue with anything that you've suggested in all four of those. I think they're all necessary, and I think they address the needs very comprehensively. But I think if you're talking about reshaping the system, you need a system number 5, which I'm going to suggest to you, and it goes to the point that I made to the commissioner earlier, and I'm not sure what to call it, but it's something like improving analysis for right-sizing. And I think it deserves the level of recognition of being another one of your systems, so that ultimately it gets institutionalized as a process. I make the analogy to the medical sector, where over the last 5 or 10 years, the whole process of second opinion when it comes to surgery, for example, and so forth, getting at the fact that within the medical sector, there was a recognition that surgeons do surgery and other types of doctors do other things, and there was a need to institutionalize a process where there was a step back, an opportunity for the customer to find out whether, in fact, with a broader perspective, there might be another approach. And it was really addressed by the medical sector, really by the insurance companies, because of the potential for cost saving, though it also had other benefits in terms of impact on the patient and various other things. So that's an analogy, but I think that having a fifth system here, and I don't propose to tell you how to do this, but it gets at this issue of making sure we're institutionally, each time we look at a project, taking that step back and saying, is this really the right project to address this need, nothing less, nothing more, somehow ought to be elevated to the level of a fifth system if you're really talking about reshaping the system. That's my suggestion.
Excellent point. Excellent point.
And I would add another one. Having been in local government, I would concur with your suggestion that having VDOT as the bad guy is certainly used often. But what really means a lot to me in this whole land use process and connecting it with transportation is looking at the connection between the comp plans and VDOT's plans. And maybe this is going to be addressed in 3202 with the urban development areas. But it seems to me that we need to have a much closer connection between VDOT and the comp plan of each one of our localities. And to carry that even further, and particularly in Hampton Roads and in Northern Virginia and other more developed areas, we need to look at it more than just as a locality and VDOT. We need to look at it as a regional land use issue. We need to think about where our transit lines are going to be, for example. And VDOT and Matthew's group need to look at where those transit lines are going to be, not only today, but where they're going to be in the future. We need to coordinate the land use patterns around those areas so that we can develop the density that we need to make transit work. In a lot of Hampton Roads, transit doesn't work because the density is not there. And you can't get people to a stop to make it work. In Arlington, Alexandria, around the metro stops, the way they've developed those transit-oriented development patterns there, it does work. It seems to me that we're not doing what we need to do to make that coordination. And you know, the governor's effort to connect land use and transportation, in my view, has to go beyond street standards, which I think are important. and some of these other things that we're talking about. But the bigger issue here is that we have to look at that comprehensive plan that a locality is doing and connect what VDOT is doing so that we're all on the same sheet of music. We're not developing out in places that are going to exacerbate already a stretched system. Maybe you get at that with the UDAs, but maybe not.
Another excellent point. I think that the two points are related. They are related, and as we move forward here, we're gonna work on how we can incorporate that. Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Let me just add on that note. If you read the enactment clauses of House Bill 3202, and you talk about hard decisions. What those two metropolitan areas, Hampton Roads and Northern Virginia, have to do is to develop performance measures for land use and transportation, and those have to be agreed to by this body. I can assure you that will not be an easy task, especially those of you who represent those areas. And explicitly mentions job housing ratio, access to transit. Those things are all contemplated. And that's where, you know, you raise the issue correctly about we have to be looking at the system. That's our job, not necessarily individual pieces of it. That's the right way to do that and to make that connection. It's not to be boring in on individual rezonings or even an individual segment of a highway, but to make sure that the network works and that there is an agreement between the Commonwealth and those regions. That is a very important mechanism, and probably by this time next year, we're going to be faced with the series. That's what the Accountability Commission is working on. I think today their subcommittees are looking at this exact issue. How do you develop performance measures for transportation and land use on a regional basis in a way that is, you know, fairly simple, enforceable, and at the end of the day can be agreed to by this body and those regions? And that's going to be a very interesting and tough dialogue at that level.
And you will get a significant amount of resistance from local governments when you start talking about, if you start talking about individual land use decisions. That's something that's guarded by local governments. But the regional concept makes so much sense. I have to think that we're on the right path by approaching it from that standpoint.
Ms. Curry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I listened to Mr. Tucker a little while ago, and he was speaking about the rail systems and about the quarter and about the transit and where stops would be and et cetera. Then I listened at this presentation, and he's speaking about Hot Lanes Network and then performance, and where we have got to come and put all of this, as I listened to Mr. McCarthy, I believe, and his concern a little while ago, that this has all got to come together very quickly. If not, 95 is going to be a parking lot. It's going to be a commuter parking lot. And that's what it has become, you know, already. And we speak of the safety issues. That's what we are all about, is the safety, and that we don't have fatalities. And I hope that when you visit the area in the Fredericksburg area and from Stafford on down to the Zongsburg, that some way that we can get an overview of what's happening and that 95 is becoming a parking lot. And it's critical. And that's where our fatalities are really going to be, you know, going to hit us in a way that we're going to say, what happened? So we really, you all have, I commend you, and you're doing a great job on strategic planning. And when I think about comprehensive plans, I believe that in Stafford, am I right, Court, your comprehensive plan has primary settlement areas, and which is the growth areas. And so that has that all along that corridor. And that's the comprehensive plan. That's what it states. We have them. And where is the impact? It's impacting those quarters so drastically, and because of the comprehensive plan, And I certainly agree with you that that VDOT is certainly working, I believe, with localities more than ever because they've had this opportunity. And I believe localities are taking this opportunity to work together because something has to be done. We're just in a critical stage. And your strategic plans are great, but we've got to move.
Message heard. Question?
I just want to make a quick observation to reinforce what you said. I gave a talk last night to a group of local legislators and local officials, and when I calmly mentioned the fact that the CTB would be involved in approving the two regional, the land use aspects of it, notes started scribbling and eyebrows started raising. I'm not sure the word has fully gotten out to everybody about that. It will be fun.
Well said. Mr. Worley, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm going to review the reshaping the business focus area. There are six items: improving project delivery, ensuring efficient and effective VDOT management, unify the system investment process, improve SWAM, and I'll explain that acronym later, assess internal controls, and engaging key partners. I will say before I get into the detail that the commissioner and I are, we go around to each district quarterly and we review the business processes of each district and we focus on a number of different items. You may not see that listed here, but I want to give you some feel for the structure. That we're meeting with all the key management, going through a number of items, from construction projects to maintenance projects to administrative items to human resources issues. We're doing that on a quarterly basis in more of a business meeting environment. So I want to say, even though you don't see that on the schedule, that's some of the underpinnings as holding a number of these items together, and the reason I believe we're making good progress on running a good business. We have a lot of improvements. I probably could name some more to put on the schedule, but these are the ones that we want to focus on this year or in FY08. In terms of improving project development and delivery, implement and enhance construction engineering and inspection process, and we call that CEI. If you remember the dashboard, we're looking at construction contracts. Is it on time? Is it on budget? Now we're looking at the additional cost or other costs that's associated with bringing a project to completion. That cost could be project engineers in charge of the project. It could be our inspectors. It could be a number of various disciplines within the department that would be charging for these projects. The key here is, do we have a budget? What is that budget, and are we managing and monitoring that part of the business? Last year, we had on the business plan the development of the CEI process. Now, this year, we are implementing that process. It's what the commissioner talked about earlier. In FY07, we developed the CEI process. Now, we're implementing. Evaluate and implement appropriate recommendations for the Transportation Accountability Commission. We felt that was an important part to put on this plan because there may be some new items coming out that again, will enhance the business. It could very well be that some of these recommendations may be in other areas of reshaping the system, but we felt this was a good placeholder to put it under the business, under reshaping the business focus. The commissioner talked a little earlier about the implement context-sensitive solution. We met with our key managers around the state and at our GOVR leadership conference a couple of weeks ago. And it's a lot of discussion, a lot of interest, a lot of good ideas about how to bring this program on. And I saw a lot of excitement around it. In terms of the investigate reducing project development time by 10%, again, that was one of the more exciting discussions that we had because there was a lot of debate. how do you reduce that resulting time? And with a number of engineers in the room, they got into laying out all of the processes step by step and trying to overlay that and said, now what brings value to this process, what doesn't bring value, and what can be eliminated. I thought that was a real good discussion, and it's going to be a hard one to pull off, but I think it's going to be worthwhile. Review past outsourcing initiatives to ensure effectiveness. This is the issue that the board brought to us, you know, some time ago. Let's make certain that these things that we're outsourcing make sense. Let's just not outsource them and forget them. Let's go back and take a look at them and make certain we're getting our money's worth out of outsourcing those particular projects. So that was the reason we had that item.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner, or I guess Deputy Commissioner. On that particular initiative, do we have objective analysis of past outsourcing contracts that are some types of reports that we could have a measure of, that we could look at, that's been evaluated, so we would
have a baseline, and from that baseline we could evaluate how we are doing with this outsourcing initiative. For example, on the CAMS process that we just went through, we do have a baseline for that cost. So as we go through or complete a year, we can evaluate the effectiveness of that contract, both from a cost standpoint and also from an operational standpoint.
But there are reports on various outsourced contracts that we have that we would have access to that's been analyzed that could be...
Cost-benefit analysis we do have for the items that we've outsourced, yes.
And operational.
And operations, we know what the performance measurements are.
Did they deliver what we asked for, I guess is the...
I think we haven't conducted the study on was the past outsourcing initiatives effective. But we're going to do that this coming year. Now, I thought the question was, do we have a baseline upon which to measure and evaluate those past outsourcing activities? And we do have that, and that will be done in FY08.
Mr. Chair. Greg, can I go back to the investigate reducing project development by 10%? Is that an ultimate goal, or is that an interim goal?
I think that would be an interim goal.
Okay, because that just in this formation of our Northern Virginia Transportation Authority, we've had meetings with a lot of the local technical people, and I would say that is the major consensus item, is the time delay, and I think this is what you're talking about, between developing a local project and getting it through the necessary approval processes here, and that seemed to be the number one concern, and that's why I look at 10%, and that wouldn't satisfy that audience at least.
Right. Yes, that would be an interim goal. Strategy two, to ensure an efficient and effective VDOT management. I failed to mention that there will be a strategic leader appointed for each one of these items that we have, and there will be timelines and some action items developed to ensure that these items are done. Implement area headquarters consolidation. We did a study last year. We're in process of implementing, and we're getting regular reports on how we stand with the implementation. Develop a list of candidate functions for outsourcing, evaluate outsource as appropriate. We still have the legislation that requires us to look 12 months back and look 12 months forward. In other words, what have we outsourced the last 12 months, and what do we plan to outsource for the next 12 months? And the commissioner is have to report on that in November of each year. We do have a process and a methodology of trying to identify some candidate functions for outsourcing, and we will put those through a cost-benefit benefit methodology that we developed in FY07. Develop and fund research. That was you probably saw that on the plan last year. We think that is something that is important and should be on the plan this year. You need to invest in research because that's the only way we're going to improve our process. Strengthen advisory groups, and I need to explain this a little bit. MPLG, DCE, MPLG stands for Maintenance Program Leadership Group. DCE stands for District Construction Engineer. There are a couple other acronyms that I didn't put up there, but here's the focus of that item. Our field folks know the processes. They know the business. They know how to build a project. They know maintenance. What we're trying to do is to formalize that group. We have our key maintenance leadership folks get together, and they debate policy, they debate process, they debate better ways to deliver the product. What we're doing is creating more of a formal process as opposed to, and I don't like to use this word, but an ad hoc process, a formal process to say, here are the recommendations and ideas coming out of that group. Those ideas will go up to the district administrators as a group, as a council. They will debate those and determine what types of recommendations need to be implemented. And clearly that will be presented to the commissioner and to some of the chiefs for their input. I believe if we formalize that process, it will facilitate process improvement, because who knows better how to deliver the project than the guys who are working out in the field. That sounds small, it doesn't get the headlines, but I think that's the key to improving the business. I probably should have had that as the first bullet underneath this section. And there are several other groups that we have, the engineering group, administrative group. I just listed a couple there. Unify the system investment process. The commissioner talked about this earlier. Integrate the STIP, SIP, and the maintenance and operation program into one process. We have three separate processes, and one of our areas of efficiency and to bring about clarity is to take these three separate documents and, if we can, roll them into one document. That will be a challenge. The STIP focuses more on the federal side. The six-year program has federal and state funding in it, and this will be a challenge, but I think if we can pull it off, we'll simplify the process of managing those projects. Incorporated into the transportation selection process, performance measures related to congestion, reduction, safety, transit, HOV use. This is an important area. We do have criteria now for selecting projects to go in the six-year program, and this is a suggestion that maybe there should be some other measures used into the process. Once this is flushed out, this will come back before the board, because this is basically your decision. But these are some things that we're looking at to determine if it can help in identifying projects. Improving SWAM. SWAM stands for Small Women and Minority-Owned Businesses. The Executive Order 33 that the governor's issued said that we shall, all state agencies shall reach a goal of 40% of expenditures shall be paid to SWAM vendors. Now that's 40% of discretionary expenditures. And in order to look at our budget, we have a $3.8 billion budget, but from that you would deduct the salaries that are paid. You would deduct the utilities that are paid because, you know, you can't go out and shop around for utilities, and you come down to a net number. That's called discretionary spending, and that number approximates somewhere around $1.8 billion. The governor's executive order requires us to do 40% of that $1.8 billion in SWAM expenditures. There's a process that's used to qualify companies as a SWAM vendor. The department in FY07 selected a goal of 20%. We felt we could not make the 40%. And FY06, it was 15%. I think we came up with like 13 to 14%. In FY07, we selected a goal of 20%. This year, we're running somewhere between 25 and 28%. Next year, in FY08, the goal will be 30%. I feel pretty confident that we will make that 30% goal. Enhance and develop the DBE program through the...
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Whirley, I've been associated with some other organizations at times that would look at the SWAM goals as inherently good. And my question is regarding the SWAM goals for us. What measurable and objective impact do on, what do we have to look at the measurable and objective impact on the transportation system itself that shows that the system is better off with 30% or 40% than it was? And what can we show that, let's say something as simple as a new political administration who didn't see the inherent value in it, that we can show to say why SWAM is good and we should continue doing it?
I think, Mr. Martin, we are developing some good companies that without this program would not have had an opportunity to get into the transportation or highway business. This program has allowed some small contractors, women-owned contractors and minority contractors to get into this this program, and I would say that it is, has increased competition. What makes it good for us is that increased competition drives down costs. I would say that the program is a good program, and we will see the benefit.
Thank you. If I just might add, Mr. Martin, on that topic, one of the things that we've discovered in this industry is increasing concentration in out-of-state providers, and so if we want to maintain a healthy, dynamic, competitive set of contractors, we have a very keen interest in growing that locally or on a statewide basis. You know, the contracting industries are no different than home building or branch banking. And encouraging this, it's difficult to necessarily measure it on a year-to-year basis, but we all know when we went into a dip on the competition for construction contracts, it was simply a small number of big providers being committed to other projects in other parts of the country. And so I think one of the ways to think about the SWAM program is growing businesses that create greater competition and greater diversity in our contractor pool. Very, very important, but a long-term issue will be kind of tough to measure in the short term, I believe.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're on a much firmer long-term ground, remembering that as opposed to the inherent value of giving businesses a chance that would not ordinarily get one.
Point well taken. Thank you.
The next item is enhance and develop the DBE program through the Business Opportunity Workforce Development Program. We have a $750,000 grant to help businesses get into the transportation area. We are about to launch that program, I believe, June 1 or mid-June, where we will be working with our DBE suppliers and providers to help them get into this transportation business and secure contracts within the Department of Transportation. Number five is assess the internal controls. I mentioned this last month. I talked about Sarbanes-Oxley and the impact that had onto the business community. This is the Sarbanes-Oxley-like version for state government. This mostly focuses on a section in Sarbanes-Oxley known as Section 404, and this is where VDOT and all state agencies must assess their internal controls to determine if they are effective. We need to look at the control environment and all of our controls, assess our risk, and determine if those procedures and processes are working. This requires our managers to make certifications. Not that we just have a set of procedures on the shelf, but are those procedures working? This program, we have to have a first-line assessment of this by September of 07. We must test the controls by June of 08, and we must develop an action plan for any deficiencies that were found and have that implemented a little later. The date is escaping me right now. This is a huge area for us. It's going to take a lot of time. We have already begun the process, and I think our controls are pretty good. But going through this process and assessing the environment, I've seen some weaknesses, and we're in the process of looking at some of those to fix them. I would say that while assessing internal controls is a major issue for this year, I would probably suggest to you that next year when we're doing this business plan, you may see the preparation for implementing a new financial system within the Commonwealth, within VDOT and the Commonwealth of Virginia. There is a new enterprise application process that's supposed to be ready to go in July of 2009. So next year when we come up with this reshape the business, you'll probably see a focus area in there on getting ready to implement a new financial system. That would be a huge challenge for the department. The last item, engaging key partners, continue the forum with the chief executives on improving the business practices. This is where the commissioner meets, I believe, on a quarterly basis with a number of the key executives of businesses to talk about how can we improve our relationship, our working relationship with each other. And from that comes a number of ideas and suggestions that we will evaluate and then try to implement if possible. Expand and improve the formal partnering process beyond contractors to include local governments at all levels. This is new this year. And this is where we're trying to reach out not just to the contractors about business, but also to the localities. How can they help in this process and how can we help them? Looking for process improvement. I believe that's it, and I'll be happy to entertain questions. Sure.
Any questions for Mr. Worley?
Yes, Jim. Greg, maybe the commissioner may want to answer this, and it may be that he's answered it already, and I missed it. But my question is, the panel of chief executives, how is that chosen, and how did we go about coming up with those that we're consulting with?
Chief Engineer, if you want to address that. Chief Engineer is primarily work with a group of executives.
We meet with two different groups, one from the contractor industry and one from the consultant industry. There's basically two contracting groups, the Virginia Transportation Construction Alliance and Old Dominion. We looked at all the contractors that we had. We tried to pick them from a regional viewpoint and from small and large. There's about 20 that we meet with. We did the same thing with the consultant group. Commissioner Eckerd recently met both with the contract group and the consultant group for the first time, probably in the last 6 weeks, both of them.
But VDOT picks the individual contractors and consultants, and the outside organizations do not participate in that process?
Well, they would make recommendations to the commissioner. There was a lot of people that wanted to come to these, and and he wanted to keep the numbers around 20. So we took the recommendations and then made those selections there. I worked with Byron and with Solyndra, who heads up our consultant, and then checked those with the commissioner is how we selected them.
The next presenter is Meredith Baker. Welcome, Ms. Baker, to talk about reshaping the workforce.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary and board members. In light of the time schedule, and since I got to cover most of my presentation the last time, I will offer just to take questions. A lot of what you see here on the workforce is pretty self-explanatory. So I'll make that offer to you, Mr. Secretary, just to save some time.
Gladly. We do have a lengthy presentation yet on the Six-Year Improvement Program, and we have a public comment session we do need to get to. I appreciate that, Ms. Baker. Are there questions? And if you look on page 19 of the handout, there's a listing of the five workforce initiatives?
Well, I just want to support the commissioner and on workforce item number five, the telework program. I think this is a vitally important program for the whole state and the nation. And I think if we don't show leadership in it within our own workforce, then it's hard to convince other people that this is a valuable and a wise path to follow.
There are many good reasons that any company would look at this type of initiative. I just read a World at Work survey where 63% of the employers in this last year that they surveyed have broadened and or either added that type of choice within their workforce. But from saving workspace to giving employees greater flexibility and reducing costs, and quite a few companies cited increasing productivity. So there are many good reasons to.
Well, I think also it's the leadership that VDOT.
It makes sense that a transportation agency would want to model this in the state, and that's what we're aiming to do.
Okay, Mr. Schwartz.
Just a very quick comment. In my own business, one of the things that I always thought was very, very important in terms of, and this would relate to your workforce number two goal, get the right people in the right places, is put a very high premium on creative thinking, fresh blood, broader drawing area. In my law firm, we would always have this debate about do we want in hiring practices, do we want, you know, the lawyers who got the best averages in school, so forth and so on. And one of the things some of us used to say is, no, what we were really looking for was the twinkle in the eye. You know, everybody got straight A's. The question was, which are the unique individuals who have the broader creativity, broader experience to keep the institution and the organization and the business fresh and responsive to changing conditions and changing times? And I would encourage you under workforce item two to just give some thought to how, again, how you can institutionalize that goal as you move forward.
Certainly.
It's all about compensation.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Baxter, similarly, I would say people will look and see the implicit value. And in number four, for example, it's easy to see the implicit value. For number five, it's easy for some of us to see the implicit value. One, two, and three, please get the measurable and objective link as to what the value is to the transportation system, as opposed to the people who are involved or the concept itself. But all of these things pay off. But if you want them to live beyond the current initiatives, that payoff needs to be right there for anybody to measure and see why it's good and when it's not there anymore.
We did a research study, and I actually have a white paper, and a lot of the initiatives that my directorate specifically and some of these initiatives came out of that research that we did that was research within the transportation industry as well as specific to VDOT. So I think we have a lot of these came out of looking at what the business needs are, and I hear your point. And let's be sure that we're measuring the effectiveness and translating that for our customers as well as our employees. Good suggestion. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Commissioner, do you have some closing comments for us?
Just very quickly, I really appreciate what the board has done this afternoon in devoting this kind of time to the discussion. You are, in fact, shaping what we're doing. Mr. Martin, the way I look at your comment right now is the business plan is a business, is a process by which we bolt into the organization for things that last. They've got to go beyond who's here, and that's a big challenge for us, and your advice really helps us. On the system side, I've been, as I listen to the conversation around How do you link system planning to project scope? It is kind of the theme that I think I heard emerging that needs to be recognized throughout our process. And that is something that we'll try to get fed into so that we are answering the questions that have been raised. With that, throughout the year, we'll be, you'll see my comments on my quarterly reports shift from kind of focusing at that activity sheet that you see in front of you to more on the progress reports and what we're accomplishing and learning in the business plan. Mr. Chairman, we really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you. In the essence of time, my report stands for itself as a quarterly report. If you have a question, see me after the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. The beginning of a very long journey. Let me suggest this. Let's take a five-minute break and come back and then ask for the presentation on the six-year improvement program. We do have public comment beginning precisely at 5:30. So if there are unanswered questions, we can come back after the public comment session. There will be hot food set up beginning at 5:30, but I would ask that we not eat while people are doing public commentary. If you are hungry, you could perhaps slip into the back room. When public comment is done, we can have a light supper over in that room if that's up. So 5-minute break, and we'll come back to the six-year improvement plan presentation.
This is where you need to like really good at like yoga and meditation.
They put us at home. I'm not in. I mean they couldn't put us at the Crown Plaza where they put us. And so we're
out. Would you like to see a list?
Yeah. Well, I can't remember if I said we could have gotten to a geographic around big, small.
I'd just be interested in saying it because I was fascinated by their reactions to the questions. You know, the 18 of them, no
actually. I agree with that.
That's great.
Like, and then we have all major, you know, the CPC and all those people on there. I'll get you a copy.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Brian got home?
As you well know.
Brian got there? Oh, because I was wondering if he was there with Brooke. I was wondering if he was there with Brooke. Nothing. I was just wondering how she was feeling. All right, I'll call the lady. Thanks.
You know, my daughter was
fine.
She's in
Oh.
Well, as of this week in the Cavalier,
it depends on what you're talking about.
So, you know, often we went on the monitor and we had those things all the time. So I decided to say, okay, I'm just going to get a short pump for 5 hours in the morning. But then he called up this week. Cavalier Inn, and we just had 2-room cancellation. You want them? We're all charged for one night.
That's good.
I think you know where you're coming from.
This is this exercise has really been terrific. I've been, you know, I couldn't have this lower.
Hello. Hello.
Next.
Hello.
Finding a way to engage you guys.
I think I can cut this down just a little bit.
What's that?
I think I can cut this down just a little bit to still hear it.
Yes, but
if I don't have it in my hand, laying up on the table, right.
But, you know, you've got to change the color. And then the other part of that, that makes it so difficult to even just email people or even communicate and talk to them. Either, you know? I mean,
So I think, you know, now that you say it, smart move from me, because I'm coming around this summer. I'm gonna ask you to. And I'll write it up, give it to you.
Those of us have been politically involved in the Union region for Germany. It would be good to accompany you on any of this.
Now, is he
did mention that. He mentioned the calendar.
No, I got dates reserved, but I don't know what all the times are. So it's clear that you and John are going to be conversational, so I'll make sure that.
Okay.
I'm probably bringing Mal over.
She got back. Well, you see, Now you guys can put yourself and everybody else and come in here and say we want a new plan.
Hi, Michelle. How are you? This is Mary.
Want to start with?
Agnes, doing okay?
People want to meet with me?
Oh. All right, I have a call from near Washington Hospital. That's probably the question. Thank you so much. Bye, honey.
We were going to get $46 million in this district. to deal with the primary routes. Now, I see that we're going to get 57. You gave us $11 million. We already have a contract next month. That's a $15 million project. You didn't give us one
project.
Well, counties and consumers, they don't want to offer free.
Oh, my gosh.
That's okay. I'll have an out for you.
That's great, but I share your hope.
If nothing comes out of it, it's a great
idea. So, I would like that. I'm very happy that this draft plan,
local,
also fully funded by the end of the day.
We
don't hear it.
Let's
get the show on the road. Bridging the finish in 6 years, but we'll be fully funded in the plan, and yeah, that's the first. So I'm very pleased about that. I'm very grateful for my boss here.
Going well. This new year,
but we don't have a calendar yet. We're men.
Yes, sir.
Which is less than they've got last year.
Coming in on detail end of yeah, because this was
built, constructed, debt incurred
years
ago, and
Mr. Bowie, always good to see you, sir. I'm hustling those still. I got done with the North Virginia some
certainly,
by the way, somebody else has been in all this.
Jim, how are you?
He's an asset.
Good.
Good.
You're down to your neck of the woods, yeah, but I'm committed to doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm going to do it.
Come along with it.
And I'm going to go to many, many other
problems. Oh, really? Okay.
I'm more. Well, no, I'm not going to ask you.
This year.
Wherever they told me.
One has this perfect for their moment.
Especially as we go into these universities.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be fun.
Oh, wow.
I mean, yeah. You really, you should have seen the book.
That's
And I was very concerned, as I just said.
Yeah. Well,
as we go through, I don't know if you asked.
I promised Julia that I'd give her
a there's a matrix and a grid and a rating, and in the process of that,
pops up next year. They didn't get what they
wanted.
They all.
So this was what? It was right after
it was published.
I mean, it was almost recovering. She, thank God, is doing it. We got her on antibiotics, whatever it is.
That's a compliment.
Everybody take their places, please.
Did you get enough, or do you need another paragraph?
Okay, we have just 1 hour for a presentation, and I know there'll be a lot of questions. Barbara Reese is here, along with Chip Badger, to give us an overview of the 6-year improvement plan as well as 6-year financial plan, two different documents. Barbara, if you could welcome Ms. Reese, if you could lead us through both.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. To begin, in part because there are some new board members, I did want to walk you through what your requirements are as they are set out in state law in terms of the 6-year financial plan as well as the 6-year improvement program. And you can see those on page 2 of the presentation. You administer and allocate the funds in the Transportation Trust Fund. You do have to set aside the defined portions not only to mass transit and construction, but also to the port fund and the airport fund. You have to allocate money to the highway maintenance function, and well as to the interstate primary and secondary, and then review and comment on budget items that aren't specifically enumerated. In terms of your 6-year financial plan, and we talked a little bit about this, I guess it was last month or the month before when we talked about House Bill 3202, it is the document that includes the official estimated revenues and allocation assumptions. For this 6-year period, it is $28 billion. It is based on the official estimate from the Department of Taxation of Transportation Revenues. That financial plan does determine the funding that is available in the 6-year improvement program for rail, transit, ports, aviation, and highways. And I would remind everybody that for the highway part, that is the last item that gets funded. Everything else is a priority before the highway construction program. And it also sets the actual budgets for the Department of Rail and Public Transportation as well as VDOT. unlike other state agency, the Commonwealth Transportation Board actually has to take an action in addition to allow us to have an annual budget. Most agencies just operate off the Appropriation Act of state government. In terms of revenues, the estimated revenues, as I've already mentioned, is $28 billion that's available for allocation. $3.3 billion of that does result from the 2007 General Assembly actions. Our average state revenue growth is 4%, and that does exclude the bond proceeds. That compares to a number of 2.7% last year. So House Bill 3202 added 1.3% to our revenue estimate over the 6 years on an average. Our average federal revenue growth is also about 2%. And right now, because our current federal reauthorization ends in 2009, for fiscal years 10 through 13, it's based on just what the estimated fuel consumption growth is in Virginia. There is, I want to remind everybody, there is a National Surface Transportation Policy and Revenue Study Commission that was set up in Safety Lewis that is supposed to be looking at how the next reauthorization will meet the surface transportation needs of the 21st century. Projections still are that the Federal Highway Trust Fund could run out of actual cash in 2009, so we still have all that uncertainty out there. So you do not see us building up, assuming any growth in federal revenues at this point. Just to detail a little bit, the General Assembly actions in 2007, it is House Bill 3202 itself includes $2.8 billion for this six-year period. That's $1.3 billion in new revenue and $1.5 billion in bonds. And then there is another $500 million in one-time general funds for the specific projects. The largest item in that is $305 million for negotiated Public-Private Transportation Act or design-build projects. Those are specifically enumerated in the Appropriation Act, $65 million for rail enhancement, $60 million transit capital, and $20 million local revenue sharing, as well as the port funding. In terms of the overall estimate, page 8 just shows you the revenue estimates broken down. And again, if you look at the total, how we broke down state transportation revenues, you see the first item is the Highway Maintenance Operating Fund. We have not shown it with the 3202 revenues embedded in that number. Transportation Trust Fund, Priority Transportation Fund, and then House Bill 3202 revenues lined out separately, and then local and other revenues. The local and other revenues on the state level do include still the Dulles Rail Project and the expected local share until the agreements are all done with MWA and there is an official transition. We will continue to carry those revenues in our estimate because the Dulles Rail Project is still a Commonwealth of Virginia project at this time. And then at the very bottom of that slide, you can see the other financing sources, which are the bonds from House Bill 3202. Remember that the limit each year is $300 million, and then general funds in 08 of $500 million.
Mr. Chair, Barbara, moving forward in considering the permission that Northern Virginia and Eastern Virginia has in terms of revenue, will that be reflected in reports in their six-year plan moving forward?
The details of how they would want to show their capital projects that they're funding or whatnot have not been worked out. I could see situations, though, where there's a project that this board has already put forward on the interstate system where it may be a line item that will show their revenues coming in to support that project. That all has to be worked out, and we're just starting that implementation. But right now, none of their revenues are shown in this because we don't control, the Commonwealth does not control their revenues. And at this point, they have not enacted any.
Barbara, I need to be refreshed. The Priority Transportation Fund, those monies go where?
The Priority Transportation Fund, most of the money in there is the one-third of the insurance premium that has now been permanently dedicated to that fund, and those are used to pay debt service. And if the blue shaded areas, just to give everybody a context, we've shown 2006 and 2007 so you can see the change that is occurring as a result of the legislative session. In terms of allocations, This is on page 10. You see the summary of allocations. For those members that are new to the board, I would point out the order of this table is not, may seem strange, but this is the priority order of funding based on law. The first thing that the Commonwealth Transportation Board has to pay for is debt service. That service, as you can see, is going to be about average about $270 million a year. That does include the debt service for the new bonds that we will be issuing. There's other agencies and transfers that are made out of your revenues that are available to you. Those include things like DMV, Department of Taxes, support for sales tax administration, those types of things. Highway maintenance, you can see the growth in the highway maintenance program, and this is both VDOT maintenance and city and county maintenance. There's more detail in a few minutes. You can see that is where the most astronomical growth has occurred. If you look at 2006 level and compared to where we are in 2008, that's over $200 million in additional costs or spending. Operations, tolls, toll roads and administration is the next line item. Again, this is all laid out in the code about how you, what order you allocate dollars. Then you have public transportation and rail, ports and aviation. Earmarks and special financing is somewhat of a hodgepodge category that will change with the final six-year program today. That includes programs such as the $100 million for revenue sharing, the federal funds with their match that are controlled by the Metropolitan Planning Organizations that they yet have not told us how they're going to distribute those dollars, just a assortment of things. The other item that's in 2008 is the $305 million for the PPTA projects. And then you see highway systems construction is the last item. Again, that is systems construction, interstate, primary, secondary, and urban through the formulas that are in law. You can see it is the last bucket that gets filled. Whatever's left from the top is what gets put there. This is just a pie chart to show you how the allocations break down. Debt service of your total revenue is about 6%. Between earmarks and special financing and then highway systems construction, that's about 32% of the total. But by and large, highway maintenance and operations are our two largest sources of spending. The spending priorities that you've had for the last 5 years really have not changed. Our way we put the budget together has not changed in the six-year financial plan. Again, maintenance is 37% of the total budget, and that has grown more than 15% or $200 million since 2006. For FY 2008, we are assuming 4.25% growth for that program, and that's both for VDOT maintenance as well as the city and county maintenance. And then our out-year assumption is 4%. And those details are shown on page 13. You can see the difference between the highway system maintenance that VDOT administered and then the payments to cities and counties. And just to give you a comparative note, in 2005, FY 2005, VDOT maintenance was $994 million, and county payments and city payments were $286 million. That's the amount of growth you can see there in the last several years.
Ms. Reese, maybe it would be a good idea to stop, you know, at this one point, the highway maintenance both statewide and to the localities, but if you stand back and look at House Bill 3202, it is worth remembering what we call the maintenance deficit. We, in the current year, we're taking $450 million out of construction and into maintenance. And the revenues from House Bill 3202 will add a little over $200 million to those maintenance funds. And that gap will continue to grow. So this largest single element in the transportation program and the most rapidly growing is going to continue to be an ongoing problem. The House Bill 3202, as we've said, is a great bill for transit and rail and regional funding, but we still have a fundamental problem simply in paying for the operation and maintenance of our existing network, and we're essentially borrowing from capacity improvements to do that, and that's a short-term and not a very sustainable form of borrowing at that. So that issue will remain before us.
Just to reemphasize what the Secretary said, over the six-year period, I believe it's about $1.7 billion or so that is being taken from the construction fund and put back on to maintenance to fund those activities. So it is a significant amount of money. In terms of other VDOT spending or allocations that have been assumed in the six-year financial plan, we have assumed no growth at all in any of the other programs other than the legislatively approved pay increases. State employees, all state employees did receive a 4% pay increase that will happen in FY 2008, and there were some health benefit and retirement benefits that go along with that. It's important to remember that VDOT's staff strength has been dropping dramatically. 5 years ago, I think we were around 11,000, and we're now down to about 8,700 employees. And that compares to about 9,100 employees July 1st of 2006. And what you see, one result of that, is if you go out on the dashboard and look at internal payroll expenses, that is one of the things under finance, our payroll expenses, even though there's been about a 10% pay increase overall for state employees in the last last year, we are flat in terms of our payroll expenses. We're not growing in terms of, even though costs are going up, we're staying flat as we have less employees. And then the land development program, as the commissioner mentioned during the business plan, the whole implementation of 527 is still funded in this budget. In terms of the working draft for the six-year highway improvement program, and I guess the first thing I would say to all of you, it is definitely a draft program this year. It is a working draft program. As everybody has said, we actually have some money to spend. Everybody is trying to step back and make sure the right decisions are being made. There is $7.8 billion available for allocation for highway construction. I would remind all of you that the law does allow you to decide to put highway funding toward transit or rail projects in addition to highway projects. That number does include the $305 million for those identified PPTA and design build projects. Right now, there are 49 new projects in the six-year working draft, 33 of which are bridges. If you look in the working draft book that was left at your place today, in the front packet, there is a listing of all the new projects in the six-year program, as well as regarding BRAC, which I'll talk about in a minute. The additional funding that has been
shown. Could I just ask, is there any difference between what is at our desk and what we got in the mail?
No, ma'am.
Okay,
other than we were just making sure everybody had a copy.
No, I just wanted to be sure I wasn't.
Those spreadsheets that I mentioned are in the front of the one that was at your place today. There are two spreadsheets at the very beginning of the book in the pocket on the front, Mrs. Conway, if you look, along with another copy of the Secretary's letter.
And if I might, because I know a lot of people say, where are the new projects? This is for projects that are truly new. So if a project has been accelerated for construction, it does not show up on this list. So, how you define what's a new project is very important. And so there are projects that may have been showing either as accrual towards construction or not going to construction until 2013 in the previous plan or 2012, now we'll be going to construction in the next 24 months, for example. So be real careful in the characterization of this list. There's a lot more in this program going on than just these 44 new projects.
Right. New means totally new to the program, not been in there before. And if you look, if you can identify those when you get to the actual project, it'll have the words new project in bold up in the top right corner. The additional funding that has been shown on projects in the working draft are basically to accelerate schedules on existing projects that you had already identified in the past as priorities. The working draft that was sent to you last Friday only shows projects that have new funding allocated to them in FY 2008-13. That was so to make sure you could focus on those. The final will show all active projects. We have a complete book available to you. Mr. Keene had asked for one. He can show you the difference in the size. When you look at projects that were already in there that may not have new funding identified because they're winding up or already were fully funded, but he did ask for a full copy, and you're welcome to get one. You can let Diane Mitchell or Jamie Brown Porter know, and they'll get you one before you leave tomorrow. In terms of the approach that the Secretary and everyone has talked about, and this goes back to some of the previous discussions as well, what I think I know what the Secretary would like to do by June is really take a multimodal approach to this six-year program. And we have adopted long-range plans and goals. If you remember, Mrs. Conley headed up V-Trans 2025. There were a number of goals in there. There are performance measures that are out there, and in general you can talk about them as safe use of the network, maintaining and operating the existing network, maximizing efficient effective use of it. One of the things that we're spending a lot of time on is looking at projects along a corridor and not necessarily within, say, for instance, the Richmond District versus the Hampton Roads District when you're talking about I-64, that we really need to think about the entire corridor. And the commissioner and the chief engineer are spearheading that, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. And then also just continuing to seek partnerships to leverage other, whether it be private resources or local resources, to move projects forward. In the next couple of weeks, you should expect to see a straw man of a resolution for the board that has some goals listed or is lays out the way we've developed that. We're working with the Secretary's office on that, and we'll get it to you, and then we'd like your reaction back. We didn't feel like it was appropriate for us to assume what you may want your goals to be. It's important to note that there is $550 million in highway construction funding. It's mainly interstate funding and bonds that has not been allocated to specific projects in the working draft. That is the amount of money, if you want to think about it as an average, a little less, about $80, $90 million a year available that still has to be allocated before the end of June. In terms of that, the CTB, we are asking you to have us your input on the goals and priorities by June 2nd in order for the programming staff here to have time to get a final program put together. The VDOT district administrators are working with the commissioner and secretary to consider corridor priorities and think about I-81, I-64, routes 28, 50, and Route 7 in Northern Virginia. The chief engineer is leading the effort with the districts. It is not a financial discussion. I want to make that clear. It's very much about what does make sense moving forward. The finance staff will simply get the output of that and do the programming of individual dollars to them. But this is very much a transportation engineering goal-setting process, not a finance process. The criteria that the commissioner asked the district administrators to think about and to try to shape their list, so to speak, were safety, congestion, and condition. And that outcome, when those meetings are done, I think some of them are Monday and Tuesday of next week, will be given to you for your consideration and input.
Mr. Chair, one question, Barbara. Is the $550 million an 08 allocation, or is that across the entire
It's across all 6 years.
Okay.
The other second list you had in the front of your notebook that was left for you was BRAC needs. BRAC continues to be a hot topic of conversation and concern moving forward. There's been $544 million worth of projects costs that have been identified that could potentially need to be funded to deal with BRAC. And those range from the extension of the Fairfax County Parkway up in Fairfax County to signal improvements and transit facilities. It is a broad range. You can look at that list and see it.
Does that list include those projects which have been certified for the DAR program, the list we have before us?
I believe so.
So those would, we would not need to cover those.
Right. Tom Farney is leading that effort, and he's the one that actually put together this comprehensive list. There's also focus that we're trying to put on continuing federal projects. You got to remember it's still 50% of the program. We have put in some line items to try to get some projects on the shelf. One of our concerns is as we try to deal with federal obligation strategy, making sure we have some work that is ready to move to the next stage. So you do see some line items for preliminary engineering, and I wouldn't even call it preliminary engineering. It's more about planning, NEPA, all the work that needs to be done in order to develop a project. There is some reallocation of the Northern Virginia District bond proceeds, again, just to maximize their use. Some projects have moved up in schedule, some have moved down. It's an annual process we go through. In terms of the interstate system, a reminder, because the interstate system is a federally financed program, you do not see significant increases there in terms of additional funding being put on the interstate system. Unless you make decisions to put the bond proceeds on interstate projects. The good news in Northern Virginia is that Woodrow Wilson Bridge and Springfield are nearing their completion, so there's actually out-year money that isn't having to be dedicated to those two mega projects, which was strange looking at it and seeing you actually had zeros in 13 for those two projects. There is $59 million proposed for a regional general construction engineering transportation management plan for the six mega projects in Northern Virginia and Fredericksburg. Those projects are the Beltway and I-95, 395 Hot Lanes project, Dulles Rail, the fourth lane widening on 95, the Fairfax County Parkway in Northern Virginia. And this is an area that we will call the urban partner area. We have asked for designation as an urban partner from the feds, and we're waiting to hear whether or not we're one of the ones selected for that. Yes, sir.
Real quick, as I looked through the book we received last week, when it came to the HOV hot lanes, I didn't see any funding in there for the P&E in the out years. Is that because it's reflected somewhere else? Did I miss something?
The 395, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, HOV.
That was not for the hot lanes project.
Yeah, it was not in this particular book.
Well, the good news is this afternoon or earlier today, the TPB, in Northern Virginia did vote to include it in the constraint long range plan. So now we will show some PE, but again, that is a privately financed.
Right. No, I recognize we have some portion of that.
Right. And because we don't have an agreed-to financial plan yet, you may not see a lot, but those projects are moving forward, and we're very excited about that vote today.
Yeah.
So I know you are, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Reese, would you please explain to me the, it says, in Northern Virginia, Fredericksburg District, urban partner area. Explain that to me, will you please?
Let's see, I guess it was in March, maybe February of this year, The federal government, FHWA, and the U.S. Department of Transportation is putting a major emphasis on congestion reduction.
Okay.
And one of the things they've done is said, we are reaching out to ask, and it doesn't have to be a state agency, it can be an MPO or someone else, to ask for what's called urban partner designation. If you are... we applied for that designation. What that means is if there's funding available, we could get priority for that funding. It doesn't bring funding with it. So we submitted at the end of April for urban partner designation. What we included, and we can get you a copy of the application, are the boundaries of the Northern Virginia District, but then it comes down through Fredericksburg and goes down to about the Thornburg area of 95 to be an urban partner designation. What we hope to get from that is additional money for transit as well as for some of the teleworking and some of those other congestion management strategies as well as priority for other funding that may be available in the future.
Thank you so much. That sounds good.
Yeah. Well, we hope
so.
Good
job. Great.
In terms of the interstate system as well, there is increased funding to ITS activities, signals, guardrails, operations. The truck climbing lanes in both Montgomery County and Rockbridge County have been funded. FHWA agreements, one of the things that we continue to work toward is there were a number of agreements that may have been signed as early as the early 1990s that said, if you allow us to build this, in turn we'll also do this. Well, some of these are still outstanding, and three of those that are major that are still outstanding that we're now trying to get off our books are I-581 Interchange in Salem District. That has a cost of $69 million. I-95 at Route 630 in Fredericksburg, that's a $185 million interchange project. I-64 in Richmond, which is out in western Goochland County, for $23 million. Those we are funding to the extent that the money was feasible and available. In terms of the primary system, We believe we have funded most of the CTB or all of the CTB primary systems priorities that you had identified, or that we had gotten information from the districts that were your priorities. We do need you to confirm those lists. The allocations for the primary system that you see on actual projects do address existing projects trying to move up their schedules. You'll see a lot of cases when you look at the schedules on a project, you might see construction in 2013, but now the project's fully funded in 2010. So we need the districts to go back and reset schedules because now funding is available. Some of the key ones you'll note in there are the Route 360 corridor in Richmond District, Route 29 corridor in Culpeper District. Mr. Davies, we have put the new corridor plan from basically around Route 6 up to Interstate 66 to look at that whole comprehensive corridor, and I know you're working on that. Route 11 in Bristol District, a number of projects such as that. And again, Route 7, 50, and 28, because there's so many things going on there, we really want the district and the CTB members from that area to prioritize which of those projects are priorities, because there's quite a few choices. Page 23 may be the most important page in terms of your urban and secondary systems, the federal share of construction. If you remember last year, if you look at 2007 on the graph at the top left, if you remember where you see that spike about federal share of construction was over 70% last fiscal year in terms of what was in the six-year program. If you remember, the graph was it continued to go up a little bit to where it was almost at 80%. Basically, you had no discretionary state dollars left in the six-year program. Happy to report that with 3202's passage, we have got that average share down to 48%. So now you see it coming back together in the middle, which is basically where it really needs to be. For the secondary and urban systems, where we were looking at 48% last year, their federal share of revenue will be down to an average of about 14%. 80% of their systems don't qualify for federal funds, so now they'll actually have some money to do some really good things on their system with state dollars. Your next steps, there are 5 public comment meetings beginning tonight through May 31st. We do need your priorities, including corridors and multimodal goals, by June 2nd. You can send those, and we'll put out a note to the commissioner and Jamie Brown-Porter to make sure all that gets incorporated. We need revisions by the districts of schedules and estimates. We are hoping, because there are so many projects that we're able to fund earlier, that that will actually free up some more money in the out years as schedules and estimates get reset from that. And then our final program, our goal is to have it to you by June 17th for final board review before your meeting in June. And with that, I'll be happy to answer questions.
Barbara, on the interstate, that's statewide rather than district allocations. A couple of questions. One area that bothers me so much is, for example, Exit 17, Interstate 81. There's $58 million less allocated on that than there was last year. That's going to be awfully hard to explain to the people who've been anxiously waiting for that. It was removed from the six-year program when the comprehensive study of I-81 came about. Finally got put back on. The people in Abingdon feel that they have, and I think rightly so, feel they have a very serious congestion problem. They're going to really be unhappy when they realize that not only are they not moving forward, but they've taken a huge step backwards. Now, I assume that some of the money has been taken out to put on projects which can go forward immediately. And if that's the case, what assurance are they going to have that it's going to be replaced when they get down the road a little ways?
Well, number one, it hasn't been put anywhere. If you remember the $550 million I mentioned is out there to be allocated remaining. What we were, as we started putting this all together and we looked at it, you know, those interchanges. For example, there's one in Salem District at Route Exit 150, Troutville. We pulled the construction funding off of that project as well because the Secretary has asked for everybody to step back, look at those corridors and say which are the priorities to make sure that before we put money toward construction of those, that everybody agrees that that would be the priority from a corridor perspective. So in the case of I-81, there are two major interchange projects. One is the one in Abington and the other one's in Troutville, where it's not saying that by the time you do a final program that those funds won't be back there, but it's just saying rather than making a promise in the working draft that you may come back in the final and say, you know what, this can't go to construction until FY11. We don't need to put as much money on it in the next couple of years. This is not setting any unrealistic expectations. Same things happened on 64 in Richmond District and Hampton Roads District on projects in that corridor, 95, same thing. Again, it's stepping back. Commissioner and the Chief Engineer are working with the district administrators to gather data and information around those three criteria, and they'll be working and then talking with you about what should be the priorities, all the board, and then sending it back to us for programming.
Mr. Bowie, and there's probably not an individual on the board that doesn't have a project they like on the interstate system that may appear in this draft to be a little bit less than where it was last year. And last year they were not fully funded. But we're at a very important historical moment here, which is this is the first time in about 8 years, certainly five, I can speak from personal experience, when we have not been cutting. And we actually have an opportunity to make investment decisions. It is very important that we make sure we're making the right ones. The project you cited may very well be the priority of the board. That's why there's $550 million set aside to do that. But we owe it to the General Assembly and to the taxpayers to make sure that at this one moment, and this is just the interstate program, there are other issues in primary and secondary and urban and public transportation, to make sure at this moment that these funds are being properly spent and that it is the right priority. So, for example, in the 81 corridor, you know, you got truck climbing lanes, there's the two interchanges, there are spot safety improvements, there are a lot of things in that corridor. We ought to stand back at this point and say and ask the hard question, is this the right thing that we're doing? We've not had that luxury previously, and so I would say, even though some of the folks in your district may be a little concerned about that, I would view this as an opportunity to make sure that the folks throughout the entire corridor are being well served. And this is going to be a hard discussion. This is a statewide program, but this is an historical moment and one that we do need to take full advantage of. Mr. McCarthy.
Mr. Chairman, do I understand you to say that, yes, there is $550 million to be allocated for priority needs, but as long as you're doing that to identify priorities, you're also temporarily, at least, reconsidering some previous interstate allocations, and it'll be up to us individually, perhaps collectively, to say, okay, the real priorities in 81 corridor are the real priorities in 64 corridor, 95, whatever.
Yes, sir.
That's the way you... Okay. I want to make sure I'm clear on that.
And if I could just add one note, too. On the interstate projects I mentioned, like the truck climbing lanes, or the ones that were the federal agreements, the only projects that are shown for construction are those that have a federal requirement. The truck climbing lanes are an earmark. We have no choice. We are going to build truck climbing lanes. Same thing when the interchange in the Fredericksburg District, the one in Salem, those are the only ones in there. I would also point out that we pulled no funding off of any project in the early years of the six-year program. PE and right-of-way in all cases are still funded.
In terms of the project in the Fredericksburg region,
mm-hmm.
It's my understanding from the engineers that part of the reconstruction of that will be driven by, it will be required to be done because of the HOV hot lanes coming through. That it's the current one will not be able to remain when those come through. Is it possible for any of the costs for the construction of that to be folded into the into the HOV hot lane proposal of the partnership?
We're hoping on that. I think Mr. Ogle was here. I'd asked for that information. I know he's working with the chief engineer. So that is some of the considerations. We have the same situation on the Capitol Beltway, where we had work in there on at 66 at the interchange, and looking now to see, we are to probably envelop that into the hot lanes project as well.
If that happens, I mean, what part would we still be responsible for funding? Is it the PE right of way, or?
That's all in negotiation.
Okay.
So.
Ms. Short. Mr. Chairman, just a logistical question. Is there any facility for videotaping or anything, the public hearings that are going to go on over the next few weeks? Any possibility that for those of us who can only get to maybe one or two of them, we'll be able to get a DVD or something so that we can actually see the ones that we're not able to attend and see the testimony? And also with respect to any written record that comes in from those, will those be assembled so that those of us who want to can leaf through them and read them?
Written record, yes.
Yes, we are transcribing.
And we will we'll make some kind of recording, whether video or DVD, available.
It won't be video, but we are doing transcripts. We have a court reporter here that will transcribe the entire meeting, so we meet all of our federal public hearing requirements.
Is it possible that there'll be, if not a visual, an audio, Barbara?
I know they asked about that for tonight, and I don't think we set it up for tonight. We can look about it, the others, but we are definitely doing written transcripts.
Okay.
And the other thing is, you have to remember, there's lots of comments we get in through the email system or in writing that we'll also put together.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, one last comment. Barbara, we're going to miss your comments as CFO in the future, which we have referred to as Reese's Pieces. But you posed an interesting set of policy questions ahead on your slide 10, which it's remarkable the transportation package passed and somehow highway systems construction money went down. The second is the earmarks and special financing category is pretty healthy in the out years. And does that set up an alternate CTB allocation formula of some kind, or eventually do we get a piece of that action too?
Mr. Coulomb, remember, last year, 2007 numbers are final. If you remember what I said, if you look at the 08 through 13, some of the things that are still up in earmarks and special financing, such as CMAC money, STP regional, there's bonds about $80 to $100 million a year, the TPOF, the $305 million, all that will end up down in that highway construction line by the final. But for right now, because it hasn't been allocated to a specific project, the earmarks and special finding is sort of the holding category. So that number, it may not come back down to $340 million, but it will come much closer to that.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to your Deputy Secretary comments, too.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions before we hear from Mr. Badger? Welcome, Mr. Badger. You're going to walk us through the rail and public transportation draft.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm very cognizant of the time here, so I will do this as quickly as I possibly can. Yeah. We start with the first data slide here. This slide is what we call the before and after slide. This shows you what the revenue forecast for rail and public transportation looked like before this session of the General Assembly and the special appropriations that were made as compared to what came out. And the essence of this slide is the bold blue banner across the top that says transit and rail revenue forecast increased by 45% as a result of the events that took place at the General Assembly session this year. Very good news indeed for rail and public transportation. This slide shows the one-year comparison for rail funding. This is fiscal year 07 versus fiscal year 08. The big news, of course, is the special appropriation of $65 million for rail capital projects. Likewise, we also have the start of rail bond funding for rail capital projects, providing a grand total increase of $77 million in additional funding that will be available for fiscal year 08 as compared to what we had in fiscal year 07. The projects that are contained in the six-year program, there's four categories. We have the Rail Enhancement Fund. The only projects that will appear in your draft program at this point in time is a continuation of three projects that have received funding previously. they'll consume about $12 million and about $17 million if you roll forward into fiscal year 09, and we anticipate coming in with an additional slate of projects with this program. We do have the $65 million in special appropriation that will support rail corridor improvements in the I-95 and I-81 corridors. We have seven projects shown for the rail preservation program. Those are listed in the program. And for the rail capital bond projects, we have two projects. One is a rail preservation type project, and the other one is rail enhanced. This is what the funding outlook looks like for rail public transportation. The big news, obviously, again, is the $65 million special appropriation in fiscal year 08. But what's really significant is if you compare the FY07 number to the FY09, that's the year that the rail bond fund money comes in full measure, and you're looking at about a $13 million increase. So it's a very substantial increase in our rail program, and we'll be looking forward to finding projects and programming those funds.
And if one went back 2 years, it would be about $3 million a year,
that's
correct?
Exactly.
Just that little green bar at the bottom, that's where we were 2 years ago in rail funding.
This is the transit comparison, fiscal year 07 versus 08. Again, we did have a very significant special appropriation of $70 million over a number of different projects, and we have the first allocation of transit bond funds of $20 million that we're awarding the projects this year. This represents an increase of $97 million in 1 year for transit capital. This is very significant and something we're very excited about. All right, this slide shows the budgeted transit operating expenses for fiscal year 08 as compared to what was budgeted for fiscal year 07. What you're looking at is about 11% increase in total expenses. Most of this is being driven by the increase in fuel prices, but it also has to do with health insurance and a number of other cost factors and some service expansions. The bars there that you see, the blue is the operating revenue. That increases also at about 11%. The state funds, the green, are increasing by about $8 million. Federal funds go up a little bit, and, of course, the locals pick up the balance. The general distribution of shares between revenue, state, federal, and local are about the same in the two fiscal years. The bar across the top, what that represents is the $113 million that we have in state funds would support about 42% of the eligible operating costs transit systems will incur in fiscal year 08. That's about the same percent that we did this year. On the capital side, we have a much larger capital program. It's about $105 million greater in fiscal year 08 than it was in 07. Most of that is due to the special allocations, the rolling stock improvements for WMATA, VRE, and Hampton Roads Transit. We also had the first full funding year for the Hampton Roads Light Rail Project in the mix. The big news here, of course, is the increase in state funding. This, again, is about a $94 million increase from 1 year to the next. Bottom line for the local governments, you can see that even though we have $105 million more in capital projects, they'll only be asked to come up with a much smaller number, about $49 million less in fiscal year 08 than they were in fiscal year 07. This is how the money will be spent. These are the major categories of spending that you'll find in the 08 program. Of course, the big consumer of funds is the WMATA system, the Metro Matters program. They also have debt service that they make payments on, and we have the rolling stock allocation. The others are Hampton Roads. Again, the light rail program kicks in earnest in fiscal year 08. VRE is a big, in a big position for procuring rolling stock. We're buying 147 replacement buses and vans next year, 42 buses and vans to expand service, and then we're improving 34 bus facilities. So that's what makes up, in a nutshell, $447 million in capital expenses. Here's the outlook for transit operating. As you can see, beginning in fiscal year 09, we'll begin to receive state recordation tax funds into the operating fund. That's a very substantial increase, especially from fiscal year 07 up to fiscal year 09. but it would, we're cautioning our transit systems that they should not assume that they're automatically going to see that much of an increase in their state grant. We're going to be implementing a maintenance of effort provision, which means that we're going to expect that the transit systems will receive as much local support for operating in fiscal year 09 as they did in fiscal year 07. This will keep the new money from simply replacing local contributions. Now, obviously, they're going to receive larger grants, but it may not be the full increase that you see there. The intent is to encourage transit service expansions. The net effect will be to help them out with costs as they increase fuel prices and other inflationary factors. They will receive more state aid to cover those, and they'll receive more state aid to cover any service expansion that they offer. So in the early years of the program, it may be that some of these funds will actually spill over into the capital program. On the capital side, again, we have a very large special appropriation in fiscal year 2008. These are the bond funds. Excuse me, this is the special appropriation. In fiscal year 09, the bond funds kick in at about $60 million a year. That's an ongoing fund, at least throughout the six-year program we're looking at. What's very significant about this is that the bond funds will go into a separate funding program than our regular mass transit capital support. And that special program, we can allocate, the board can allocate grants at an 80% state share. As most of you know, the regular state aid is allocated on a floating scale, and it matches then all over the place. It's as low as 22% this year, and for fiscal year 08, it will be as high as 52%. So it'll be up to us to determine exactly which projects will be assigned funding under which programs. We have not attempted to program the $60 million in fiscal year 09 and beyond into capital projects. Yes. However, we have received, we are receiving $20 million in fiscal year 08, and we have assigned those funds to capital projects. The way we did that, we received word on this fairly late in the game, so we really had to select projects from applications that we already had in hand. And we only had $20 million, so we had to make some decisions on how we were going to divide this money up. And here's what we did. First of all, we decided that any transit system that was getting a special appropriation would not be eligible for these bond funds. That was WMATA, VRE, and Hampton Roads. Then we came up with some criteria for selecting capital projects that would receive the bond funding. That's what's identified in this slide. Since the projects were supported with bond funds, there are certain things that we could not support, such as debt service on other bonds, leases for facilities and vehicles, and we also determined that whatever we purchased with these funds needed to have a significant useful life. So other items fell out, such as preventative maintenance, office equipment, spare parts, items like that. And finally, we determined that we didn't have enough money to fund all the facility projects that we would like to, so we restricted the funding to only those facility projects that received federal funds. That got us down to where we could allocate all $20 million, and we believe we came up with a pretty equitable distribution. So the projects that received the $20 million would be funded at an 80% state share, and the projects that received the regular state aid, as I mentioned, will receive a 52% state share for fiscal year 08. Now, very quickly, I want to take you through what you will see in the six-year program. I'm guessing that some of the newer members may be looking at our section of the six-year program for the first time, and I thought I would just highlight the major sections and explain to you what it is that you'll be looking at. These are the five sections. The first section occurs, but this is the first page of our program. We're in the back of the six-year program, so our first page is page 445 of the working draft that you have in front of us. This page identifies all of the funding sources that are allocated by this board. This includes both state funds for public transportation, state funds for rail, federal funds for public transportation. And we break it out by fiscal year. That's the sum of money that you're actually awarding as grants this year. We also do identify a six-year projection of all the allocated revenues. And as you can see, we have almost $3 billion in revenues that will be going towards rail and public transportation in the next 6 years. The next section of the program is the district section. And in here, you'll find each public transportation system, commuter assistance agency, human service agency, identified by the district that it's located in, and you'll see exactly the funds that are allocated to that system. This includes the funds that are allocated by you, and it'll also show funds that they may be receiving directly. For example, a Greater Richmond Transit System gets money straight from the Federal Transit Administration, and even though they aren't programmed by this board, they do appear in here, so you can see the total picture for funding for GRTC. Then we have a section where we have 12 tables that show the programs themselves. The intent here is to show you how the money is distributed within each program. This is where you'll find the rail projects listed. They don't actually appear in the district allocations, but they do appear project by project back in the rail tables. All of the other funds will be contained back in the district allocations. This just pulls them out by program and shows you how they were distributed. Then we have the six-year capital program, or what I should really call Supplemental 5. The first year of capital projects appears as grants, and then for the next 5 years, we show tentative allocations. There's an error on this slide. It's supposed to refer to fiscal year 09 and 10. I apologize for that. I just noticed that as I was reviewing my remarks. The intent here is to show what projects we're anticipating over the next 6 years, and a preliminary allocation of federal and state funds to support those projects. For next year, our challenge is going to be to bring in a lot of different components into our grants-making process. We'll be launching our Transit Capital Asset Management Project. That's certainly going to provide us with a more detailed and complete list of capital projects over the next 5 years. We're going to be developing a transit sustainability plan, which will help us deal with requests for major new projects that we need to take a good hard look at and make sure that the benefits are there to warrant investment. We'll also be looking at the public benefit analysis that you've heard about. We'll be taking a look at the benefits that our projects are bringing to the state. And then we do need to develop priorities and procedures for the use of bond funds over the long term. As I mentioned, we have not programmed the bond funds in fiscal year 09 and beyond, so we will need to come up with policies and procedures for doing that. In closing, I wanted to let you know that, as I did last year, I'll be contacting each one of you individually to see if you have any questions on our section of the program. I'll be happy to come out and meet with you individually and go over the program, explain anything that you might not understand, and answer any questions that you might have. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm done. Under the wire here.
Thank you, Mr. Badger. Are there brief questions or comments? Ms. Tucker, do you want to?
Yeah, I just do want to make the comment that, again, our program is our recommended program. Under the code, it does prescribe in terms of how the vast majority of DRPT funds are allocated in terms of 73%, 23%, and 1.5%. Where we absolutely are seeking the recommendation outside of what we're required to do under the code is, for example, how we chose to distribute the $20 million in bond funds. So it is our presentation is our recommendation, and we are open to feedback. Sure, we're going to get it.
Chairman, real briefly, BRE commuter and regular commuter lots, where would they be funded? Through DRPT, or are they separated out?
BRE will appear in the Northern Virginia District.
So BRE would be in here. What about those associated with the interstate system? Those would be in the
commuter
other.
Commuter rail lots are not in our program.
Mr. Coleman, VDOT had said they assumed a 4% increase in maintenance costs as part of their estimates. Did you have a similar growth number in your budget for operating expenses or the thing?
No, sir. The operating estimates that we got came directly from the transit systems, so we allowed them to provide us with their own estimates.
Okay, thank you. And by way of apology and also introduction, I neglected in my introduction, Mr. Badger, to announce that Governor Kane has appointed Mr. Badger as the chief deputy of the Department of Rail and Public Transportation just this last month. Right? Close to 3 weeks ago now. So I want to say, Chip, you've done great work for the department. You've got a whole lot more on your plate, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're going to go into the public comment session in just a minute. I would like to give, for those folks who are here for the public commentary tonight, just a couple of thoughts. The first is that the draft program that you have in front of you is very much of a draft. We talked about the $550 million that has not been allocated. That's a significant sum of money and will provoke some interesting conversation and discussion among us. Secondly, this is a homework. We are getting homework assignments right now. Your first and most important assignment is to go back and review the primary system allocations. And I would strongly encourage the district members to make sure that you consult with your at-large colleagues in that process. But that's the one thing that I think can be done in a relatively quick time frame to make sure that that work is done, because we have some very hard choices and a lot of discussion on the interstate system. Second point I would make to you, and as you communicate to the jurisdictions, whether they're counties, cities, or towns, is if you look at where the real expansion in funding is in this transportation program, it is in secondary and urban. And that decision-making process will unfold almost immediately on the urban system, but over the next several months for secondary. So in terms of managing the expectations of your localities, particularly for counties, they do their public hearings typically November, December, January timeframe. So they have a little bit of time, which in some cases is good, in other cases bad, depending upon the circumstances.
Mr. Secretary, could you just clarify, in the primary system allocations, do you mean we can only shift around, or we can say certain things need more money on them and we don't have to find it within our own district?
No, the primary allocations are set by district.
That's right. And so it is a shifting around then.
That's correct. So it would be for projects within the district and establishing those priorities. That's the one thing and probably the single most important task for you all to talk to your district administrators, can listen to the public hearings and try and nail down the primary allocations as quickly as possible. Okay? The last thing, and this is really more of an observation because this is new to all of us. I've never done an addition six-year program, but this may wind up proving the old adage. It's a whole lot easier to cut a budget than it is to add one. And we have, I think, by that measure, a great deal more work to do this year than we've become accustomed to in the last several years. So stay in touch. Pick up the phone. If you have questions, feel free to talk to your colleagues. The one thing, again, because particularly on the interstate, we do not do blast emails to people. That is not in concert with the open meeting. It's okay to have one-on-one conversations with people, but it is not appropriate for there to be email conversations among the board as a whole. That has to be done in a public meeting in a public setting. Okay? Thank you.